welcome to Aerial Helwani's MMA Show!
Back in your life on this Monday, February 11, 2019. Hello again, everyone. I'm Ariel Helwani. Welcome back to the program. Hope you had a great weekend. It is great to be here with all of you on this Monday afternoon. And we got a lot of things to talk about, my friends. A lot of things to talk about with a lot of different people. And I'm very excited about today's show in particular because we have two in-studio guests. I have to be honest, when we moved our show to Bristol, Connecticut, which is a great place, but kind of a little bit out there, I was afraid we wouldn't have any in-studio guests. But we have them. Today, and not just one, we got two. We got MVP Michael Venom Page and Paul Daly joining us in studio later in the program. I'll get to the rundown in a bit. But first, let's just quickly talk about what happened this past weekend in Melbourne, Australia. Melbourne, Australia. UFC 234, of course, by now you know what happened Saturday afternoon, really, is when the news broke that Robert Whittaker unfortunately had to pull out of the card due to the fact that he had a collapsed bowel and an internal hernia. He had to have emergency surgery. As the fight card was going on, he was under the knife. 3.5 hour surgery. He's still in the hospital as we speak. He put out a very nice message on Instagram yesterday apologizing profusely to the fans. But it was an unfortunate turn of events because as we talked about last week on the program, you know, this was shaping up to be a little mini middleweight tournament. And yes, it was a two-fight card, in my opinion. Yes, it was thin. But those two fights were so great. And it's been so long, I felt, that we had a situation in a particular weight class where it was all very clean. We knew who was fighting for the belt in the co-main event. It was the number one contender fight. This was said before. There's no jockeying of position needed. It all felt like it was working out perfectly. The stars would align for the Adesanya-Robert Whittaker fight that would happen later this year and sell out Etihad Stadium or some other big stadium, the biggest fight in Australian MMA history. It just seemed too perfect. They weigh in. Everyone's good. It's a dramatic weigh-in. Israel's crying. Anderson's crying. Whittaker looks great. I talked to his management later that night. They said he's never looked better. He's never been more focused. Everything's all good. And then we get to Saturday, and all hell breaks loose. Main event gets canceled. Gastelum doesn't fight. They don't strip Whittaker of the belt, but Gastelum walks around with the belt later that night at the event, gets some heat for it, takes Henry Cejudo's belt, which I thought was a pretty shrewd move on his part. I know a lot of people were mad about it, but that's what he has to do. Desperate times calls for desperate measures because he knew that Israel would win against Anderson, and he knew that the talk afterwards would be, as it is today, Israel should just fight for the belt next. So he had to go around just almost putting it out there in the atmosphere. I'm the champ. I'm the real champ. In my world, in the wrestling world, when you don't show up, the opponent wins. And here's the problem. He's right. Now, there's no rule like that in our sport. There's no rule like that in the UFC. But Kelvin Gastelum is right. In the world of wrestling, you weigh in, you show up to the mat, your opponent doesn't show up, you're declared the winner. So you're absolutely right, Kelvin Gastelum. There he is, walking around with that new title. And of course, the giveaway that it was Henry Cejudo's belt was, you know, Henry's his friend, but also he's the only one who actually owns that belt right now. So the timing wasn't great in that regard. He said the UFC gave it to him. We all know where it came from, but the message was this. I'm the champ because my opponent didn't show up. And yes, it was a little cold. It was a little callous. Sure. But he had to do that because he had to convince the public and the UFC that he is deserving of still fighting for the belt. That's really what he's saying. That he shouldn't be passed up. Here's the problem. Kelvin Gastelum on this Monday morning should be the interim middleweight champion. They should have crowned him the interim middleweight champion Saturday night in Melbourne. That's what needed to happen. Don't strip Robert Whittaker. Don't take that belt away from him. Don't kick him while he's down. But give Kelvin the respect that he deserves. Crown him the interim middleweight champion. And if Robert needs some time to recover, well, then just have Israel Adesanya fight Kelvin Gastelum for the interim belt. But here's the problem, because I can feel it from wherever you may be. You're rolling your eyes right now. Not another interim title. This is the problem with the past 3 years in this sport. The UFC has devalued their title to the point where the interim belts mean nothing. Just ask Colby Covington. Just ask Tony Ferguson. Just ask a number of other fighters. Interim belts mean nothing. They're like a one-night-only title. The point of an interim title back in the day, remember when Brock Lesnar couldn't fight and they had Shane Carwin fight Frank Mir? That meant something when it was for the interim heavyweight title. Remember when Hannah Burrell won the interim belt because Dominic Cruz couldn't fight? That meant something. It doesn't mean anything anymore because you devalued it. You handed it out like Halloween candy. So now everyone, if they gave him the interim title, everyone would just roll their eyes. They would throw up in their mouth because they don't like the thought of an interim title because they've done it too many times. But this is when you need an interim title. This is when you actually should institute an interim title. But can't cry over spilled milk. So now you have a situation where Kelvin is fighting for his spot, even though he did nothing wrong. Yeah, it seemed like he had some staff and ringworm, but some way, somehow they cleared him to fight. He was going to fight. I'm not quite sure about that, but he was going to fight. It seemed like all was good. It was working out perfectly, but as they say, the best laid plans of mice and men often go awry. And they went awry on Saturday. Could not salvage it. So now you have a situation where Israel is campaigning for his shot, saying that he should be next. Kelvin's saying he's the champion. We don't know what's going on with Robert Whittaker. All of a sudden, this situation that seemed so clean and perfect just last week, exactly 7 days ago, now is a total mess like a number of other divisions in the UFC. And it's unfortunate. And I don't think it's fair to blame the UFC on this one. I don't think it's fair to say that, you know, they should have had someone on standby. In this particular case, even if they did have someone on standby, if I'm Kelvin Gastelum and his team, I'm not fighting that guy on 2 hours' notice. No way. You can't do that. Mentally, you've just been through way too much to take a fight on 2-3 hours' notice. So there's really nothing they could have done. Now, if you would have told Kelvin like 2 months ago that there's a chance you're going to fight Paulo Costa at 234 if something happened, then maybe he could prepare a little bit mentally for the unexpected. But in this case, they didn't. So I'm having a hard time blaming them for not having a backup because it happened so late in the game. Same thing happened with Valentina Shevchenko and Amanda Nunes back at UFC 213. I don't think they should strip Robert. Give him time. I think that you should probably forget the past and name Kelvin the interim champion. Have Robert take his time. Have Israel fight Kelvin. And then you figure out when Robert is ready to return, have a unification bout. But what luck for Robert Whittaker. Horrible luck. Once again, last year, he has the staph infection. He internally, he has the chicken pox. He has the injured hamstring. Has to pull out of UFC 221. Just a few weeks before that event, which was built around him. And now they do it again. They go to Melbourne. They built a whole card around him. And just a couple hours before, he has to pull out because of a collapsed bowel and an internal hernia. Horrible luck. My heart bleeds for Robert Whittaker, one of the true good guys in this sport who does everything the right way, just can't seem to catch a break. A very unfortunate turn of events. Israel Adesanya, Anderson Silva was everything that I thought it was going to be. Everyone complained. Everyone was bellyaching that it was a mismatch. It was fun. I wish it was two more rounds. I understand why it wasn't. Even though it was the main event in the end, you can't ask them to go two extra rounds. It felt like you were watching a video game. Anything you can do, I can do better, said the younger Israel Adesanya. It was great. And it was kind of a win-win for all involved. Israel wins. Anderson doesn't get embarrassed. He doesn't get knocked out. He doesn't look that old, that slow. UFC is able to build Israel, but you still have some juice left in Anderson Silva. A win-win. Later in the program, we're going to talk to Israel Adesanya. Later in the program, we're going to talk to Kelvin Gastelum. We'll put 234 to bed. But like I said, we got a lot going on. We got to talk to a lot of people. So let me run down today's lineup, and we shall get to our first guest of the day. So Israel Adesanya will join us at 3:45 p.m. Eastern Time to talk about what happened Saturday, talk about his big win over Anderson Silva and where he goes from here. Who will he fight? When will he return? That man is a star. He oozes stardom. Oozes charisma. Oozes personality. He's just so much fun. They've got something with that man. Great performance on Saturday. Kelvin Gastelum will join us at 3:30. I'm looking forward to talking to him. I feel for him. I really do. Obviously, you feel for Robert, who's in a hospital right now. But to travel all the way from L.A. to Melbourne, to go through a training camp, to think you're about to fight for the belt, and to have that snatched away from you, I sympathize 100%. Francis Ngannou's back in action Sunday in Phoenix against Cain Velasquez. Main event at the Talking Stick Resort Arena. big fight in the heavyweight division. He'll join us at 3:15. And then how about this? At 1:55, we'll be joined by MVP Paul Daly in studio. Excuse me, MVP and Paul Daly will join us in studio. First, it's Paul Daly at 2:35. Then it's MVP at 1:55. The biggest grudge match in the history of UK MMA. And it's happening here in Connecticut, not Bristol, UK, Bristol, Connecticut. Well, it's not actually happening in Bristol, Connecticut. It's happening at the Mohegan Sun, but it's kind of funny we're in Bristol, Connecticut. And there is a Bristol, UK, but the fight is happening at the Mohegan Sun in Uncasville, Connecticut. They'll both be in studio, not together, but they'll both be in studio back to back. I can't wait for that. Kevin Lee at 1:40, we'll talk to him about what's next for him. Everyone calling out the Motown phenom. James Vick at 1:25, he returns to action on Saturday in Phoenix against Paul Felder. But first, you know, Saturday was a bit of a depressing one because of what happened with Robert Whittaker in the main event getting pulled just a couple hours before the event. So let's start on a positive note. You may have heard of Pollyanna Viana from her UFC fighting career. You may have heard of her from what happened last month in the news. It was everywhere from CNN, ESPN talked about it. Every show, every sports show, every regular show under the sun talked about what happened to her in early January while she was home in Brazil. Someone tried to steal her phone, tried to mug her, and did not know that she was a UFC fighter. And that individual got beat up pretty bad and learned a pretty valuable lesson. Don't judge a book by its cover. Don't mess with UFC fighters, male or female, on the street. You'll probably get your ass kicked. Let's talk to Pollyanna Viana about this amazing story. She joins us now via the magic of Skype, and she is joined by the great Alex Davis, the MMA manager legend himself here in Florida. Guys, how are you? Obrigado for joining us. I appreciate it.
Hey, Ariel. What's up?
Good to have you guys. Hello. Thank you so much. So, Pollyanna, it's been a month or so since this all went down, and you were everywhere in the news. I mean, every single publication under the sun was talking about you. A month later, has life changed for you dramatically, or has it quieted down a little bit?
Depois de mês, todo mundo tá falando de você. A vida ficou mais quieta pouquinho, ou tá todo mundo comentando ainda?
Ainda tem algumas pessoas comentando. Muita gente ainda reposta e me marca, principalmente no Instagram e no Twitter.
Yeah, a lot of people still asking about him. People hitting me up on Instagram, on Twitter.
Okay, so can you tell us what happened? Where are you? What time of the day it is? And just the whole story, how it unfolds. Tell us the story.
Então, como é que aconteceu, onde você estava, tudo?
Eu tava na frente de casa, esperando um carro, né, para ver um filme. Quando ele chegou e me abordou.
I was coming out of my house. I was waiting for an Uber because I was going to go to the movies. When the guy came in and came and tried to rob me.
Okay, and what did he say to you?
He asked me what time it was first.
Okay, and then what happens?
And then he announced that he was gonna rob me.
Wow, and so what's your immediate reaction when this happens?
Qual foi sua reação quando aconteceu isso?
Ele me falou que estava armado e eu olhei para ver se realmente ele estava armado.
He said he had a gun, but I looked to see if that was really true.
Did he have a gun?
Ele estava armado.
Não, ele estava. Ele tinha alguma coisa, mas eu vi que não era uma arma.
He had something, but I could see it was not a gun. I thought it was a knife.
Okay, and does he actually try to put his hands on you? Does he try to attack you?
Ele tentou te atacar, botar em você?
Não, ele não deu tempo, eu não deixei. Quando ele falou que era um assalto, estava armado, eu levantei e dei dois socos.
No, I didn't give him time. When he said he was going to rob me, I got up and started kicking his ass.
Okay, so what did you do to him? So he says he's going to rob you, what do you actually do?
O que você fez?
Eu dei dois cruzados e um.
I gave him two hooks and a kick.
A kick where?
Onde você chutou ele? In his face.
Oh my God! You kicked. Okay, so we're looking at the pictures right now. He was that bloody from what you did. Like the full arsenal of the attack. Look at that picture. It's unbelievable. What? Tell us exactly all the moves that you actually did on this man, because as we can see right over there, it's a pretty bloody display afterwards.
Ele estava todo amassado só desses golpes, só.
Eu acho que foi porque ele baixou meio a cara assim. Aí o chute pegou no meio da cara.
Was the kick because he put his kick on right face.
You kicked him right in the face and then he went down. And then once he was down, what did you do?
When I kicked him, I went behind him and I caught him in the chokehold.
Oh my gosh. And did he, we're back. When you choked, like, did you choke him unconscious?
Você botou ele pra dormir?
Não. Eu fiquei com medo porque ele tava sangrando. Fiquei com medo de focar e, sei lá, morrer.
No, because I saw he was bleeding a lot and I didn't kill him.
Okay. So how long does this whole thing last and how do you get the police to come? Oh, did we lose them? I think we may have lost them. Perhaps because they're outside. Sometimes the Wi-Fi outside. Okay, we're going to reconnect with Pollyanna, who, as I said, is she back? No? All right. We're going to reconnect with Pollyanna, who's describing an unbelievable story as she's waiting outside. Someone comes up to her, asks her for her phone, asks her first what time it is, and then the phone, and then she's like, oh, hell no, you're not gonna rob me. You're not gonna mug me right here, right now. I'm Pollyanna Viana, 1-1 in the UFC. Don't mess with me. And then he kicks her in the face. She kicks him in the face. Excuse me. And did you see those pictures? Can we see those pictures again? Because this is not just like your typical, you know, I'm taking down a guy. I'm actually like annihilating the man. His face completely bloodied. I mean, look at that. Look at his face. Look at his shirt. Look at all the blood. That's the toy gun, by the way. The fake gun that he had. And you'll see a close-up of his face right over there. Pollyanna, Alex, you guys are back? You can hear me?
Yeah, we're back.
Okay.
Yeah, can you...
So when you apprehend him, how do you get the police to come to actually arrest this man?
Como é que você chamou a polícia para chegar?
Eu pedi para motorbike que estava passando.
I asked for a motorcyclist that was passing by to call the police for me.
Oh my! And how long did it take for the police to actually show up?
Quanto tempo demorou para a polícia chegar?
20 minutes.
About 20 minutes.
20 minutes? So you had to stay on top of this guy, apprehending him for 20 minutes?
Você ficou com ele 20 minutos, segurando 20 minutos?
Eu fiquei segurando aqui porque eu tava com medo. Eu troquei do mata-leão para a Kimura, fiquei com medo dele se for.
Yeah, I changed. I changed from the chokehold to a Kimura because I was afraid it would suffocate him.
Oh my gosh, that must have felt like the longest 20 minutes of your life, right? I mean, you're just there alone with a scumbag.
I think for his life, definitely.
Are you conversing with the individual at this point? Like, are you telling him what you do for a living?
Você ainda tem conversa com ele? Fala o que você faz para viver?
Pra...
É, você ainda tem conversa com ele? Não, né? Não tem mais contato, não.
Yeah. Eu acho que ele ficou preso, tá preso.
No, he's in jail.
No, but while you're apprehending him, like while you're sitting with him for 20 minutes, did you tell him what you do for a living?
Você conversou com ele quando você tava com ele lá?
Conversei.
Yeah, she talked to him.
Oh my gosh, he must have felt like... And correct me if I'm wrong, you were wearing a UFC t-shirt while all this happened, correct?
Tava usando a camiseta do time também.
Daí eu perguntei ele, quando depois que eu segurei, eu perguntei, cara, você não sabe ler?
She said, Jason, can't you read?
That's unbelievable. What a dummy. And so then they come. Now, do you live in a dangerous neighborhood? Is this something that happens quite often there?
Você mora em lugar perigoso? Acontece muito?
É perigoso. Só que comigo nunca tinha acontecido isso.
It's dangerous, but it never happened to me.
Nesse lugar.
Not at this place.
Okay. Are you going to move now?
Você vai sair de lá?
No.
No.
Why not?
You know.
Porque eu quase não fico lá fora. Isso acontece mais com quem anda na rua a pé.
No, because I'm not usually outside. It only happens when people are walking. I'm never walking.
I understand that when you lived in Rio, someone tried to mug you as well. Is that correct?
When você morava antes no Rio, alguém tentou te assaltar também?
No.
No one has ever tried to mug you in the past? Did I read that?
In Belém.
Yeah, in Belém. That's Belém. The Amazon.
Okay, what happened there?
Que aconteceu?
Eu bati.
I beat them both up.
So this is the second time that this has happened where people think that you're just
third
some
time.
Sweet... Third time? What's the other time?
There were two times in Belém, the Amazon.
My gosh. Why do you think people keep trying to rob you?
O que você acha que as pessoas continuam tentando te roubar?
Eu acho que quando eu tô... As pessoas só me conhecem quando eu tô em cima do octógono, porque eu tô de trança, depois eu solto o cabelo, ninguém sabe mais isso.
I think that people only recognize me when I have my braids on. When I let my hair loose, they don't recognize me anymore.
Do you feel like if you weren't a fighter, if you didn't practice martial arts, that something bad would have happened to you in one of these occasions? Like, in a way, doing what you do, being a martial artist and a mixed martial artist, could have saved your life?
Você acha que sendo lutando, sendo uma artista marcial, salvou sua vida?
Com certeza. Ele poderia ter, se eu fosse uma pessoa qualquer, com certeza ele teria levado minha assistência e talvez teria feito alguma coisa comigo por causa do meu medo.
Yes, I think that if I was not a fighter, he could have taken everything and he might have done something worse because if I was intimidated, he might have tried to bully me or something.
Right.
Geralmente, quando assaltante assalta mulheres, eles não querem só os pertences.
When people try to steal women, they don't only want their things, you know.
Yeah. I know there's other people who teach these sort of women empowering classes and you know what to do for prevention against these types of incidents. Do you take part in any of these classes? And if not, would you be interested in doing so? Because you have actually lived it. You have the experience.
Porque tem muitas mulheres que ensinam esse tipo de classe para segurança de mulher. Você toparia dar aula assim, já que você já passou por isso?
Bom, talvez. É, mas eu não incentivo esse tipo de reação, né? De reagir. Por mais que você saiba se defender, eu não aconselho. Você tem que estar bem calmo, igual eu estava, para poder fazer, poder reagir.
Maybe because I don't advise people to react. I was very calm, and that's what enabled me to do it. But for other women, it could turn into an even worse situation.
Right. You have to be a practitioner like yourself. You can't just go out there and try to fight someone because it can make it worse, right?
That's what she means.
Right. And back home in Brazil, the attention that you got afterwards, did that make you feel uncomfortable, or did you kind of like it? I know that you were all over the news. Dana White's talking about you. What did you think of the aftermath?
E a atenção que você ganhou no Brasil, isso foi bom para você? A atenção que você ganhou?
Foi bom, e eu também ganhei atenção de... Eu acho que eu ganhei mais fãs fora do Brasil do que no Brasil.
Yeah, I think I was cool because I made more fans outside of Brazil than I made in Brazil.
It's amazing. So now you're in Florida, you're training at American Top Team because you're fighting UFC 235 against Hannah Cyphers, correct?
Agora você está aqui na American Top Team lutando com a menina lá em UFC 235, correto?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's correct.
Do you expect that your fight is going to have more attention on it now because of this mainstream star that you became for taking down the mugger?
Você acha que sua luta vai ter mais atenção porque você bateu nesse cara?
Não sei. Pode ser, mas eu acho que para pessoa, para lutador, qualquer lutador poderia ter feito o que eu fiz ou teria feito mais ainda.
Yeah, maybe, but I think that any fighter would have done what I did or could have even done even more.
Hmm. And that individual, to the best of your knowledge, he's still in jail?
O cara ainda tá na cadeia, então, né? Yeah, he's still in jail.
Wow. And I read that he's actually like a criminal who just got released from jail, right? So he's not learning his lesson in life. Is that accurate?
Yeah.
That's accurate, right?
Yes, that's
okay.
Accurate.
Unbelievable. What a story. Well, thank you for doing what you did, Pollyanna. What did you say? Sorry?
No, that's all.
Okay.
He'd already been in jail for 3 years.
Oh, my gosh. Some people never learn. Unbelievable. Well, yeah. Done to you. Parabéns for doing what you did. Unbelievable story, and it's really inspiring to see that you were able to do that, and I hope something like that never happens to you or anyone, but good on you for using what you practice each and every day to take down someone like that. Very cool story. Thank you for doing this. Thank you, Alex, as well, and good luck to you at UFC 235 in March 2nd in Las Vegas against Hannah Cyphers. I'm looking forward to it. Do some of those moves that you did on him to her, all right?
Parabéns. Espero te ver no 235 e faz algumas coisas. Você fez um ladrão, faz na menina.
Obrigado.
All right. Pollyanna Viana, remember the name. Alex Davis, thank you so much for the time as well. Unbelievable story. That story was everywhere, all over the news. Everyone was talking about it on all ESPN channels. Every show they were talking about it. I mean, you have this, you know, this woman who you don't think is a fighter, you know, nice looking woman, she's sweet there, you know, she's sitting by her apartment, and you think you're going to go and steal her phone with your fake gun? What is that thing? Embarrassing. Should be ashamed of yourself. And then she kicks him right in the face. Did you see his face? It's all swollen. Unbelievable. Well done, Pollyanna Viana. A heartwarming story to start the week after what happened with Robert Whittaker this past weekend. Heartbreaks for him. Don't mess with anyone. The moral is, don't mess with anyone, but especially not someone who actually is a UFC fighter, all right? Okay, let's turn our attention to the lightweight division. Let's turn our attention to a very important fight happening this weekend. Let's turn our attention to the next UFC event. The train continues to roll along here because the UFC is back on Sunday of this week, not Saturday. So if you're debating between watching the MVP versus Daly fight or UFC, you don't have to have that debate because it's Saturday, Bellator, MVP, Daly, and then Sunday it's the UFC in Phoenix on ESPN, first main card on ESPN. I told you earlier, main event, Cain Velasquez versus Francis Ngannou. Later in the program, we'll talk to Francis Ngannou. But the co-main event is a very important one at 155. Two guys who need a victory. Paul Felder, who had a tough 2018 campaign. Remember, he had to bump up to 170 to fight Mike Perry on short notice against our guest at this time, the one and only James Vick, who is joining us right now via the magic of Skype. James, how are you?
What's up, man? I'm good.
Good to talk to you as always, James. The last time we spoke was around 2 weeks after your fight against Justin Gaethje, and that was an incredibly honest interview. Your candor was amazing, and you were telling us how down you were, how you felt like you messed up, that you didn't know if you'd get this opportunity again. You were a little bit depressed. You were disgusted, as you said, in your performance. Do you feel like you are over what happened in August, or will you only truly get over it once Sunday happens and, you know, for your sake, all goes well in that fight against Paul Felder?
For sure, Sunday, you know, is a big deal, you know. I mean, I don't know if you're ever going to get over that. You're always going to want it back and that opportunity again, but, you know, you can't live in the past. It was a huge opportunity, though, you know, that I blew, and I don't plan on blowing this one on Sunday night.
It felt, at least, you know, through your voice, it felt that you were very down when we spoke, just, and that was just a couple of weeks later, so that was obviously understandable. How long did it take for you to get over, like to get back in the gym and to start like moving again? How long did you, you know, mourn the loss, so to speak?
I mean, it didn't take me long to get back in the gym regardless, because, I mean, win or lose, I'm back in the gym the next week, always. Maybe I'm, you know, I'm smarter than I used to be, and I don't go back just going super hard, but I do, you know, I do go back and start training within usually 3 or 4 days after the fight again. So I'm always back in the gym, but I got some stem cell injections and stuff, so I had to take a couple weeks off where I couldn't do any exercise at all and stuff like that. So that kind of, you know, refreshed my body a little bit and stuff as well. But besides that, I stay in the gym.
Stem cell injections for what?
Just some, I've had a lot of like chronic tendonitis and stuff from running, you know, my knees, and nothing major, you know, no major injuries, fortunately, because, you know, I've had a bunch of injuries in the past, but just tendonitis, my elbows, my knees, and shoulders, stuff like that. So I just went and got a bunch of injections in it from a really phenomenal company in Ohio.
By the way, what's going on back there? Who's yelling? Who's so upset?
Sorry, the jiu-jitsu class. Y'all called me like 5 minutes early. I was trying to go down to the car and to do the interview, but The jiu-jitsu class is going on right now, and it's the competition team, so they're going pretty hard.
Okay. Well, sorry about that. Don't mean to call you early, but I'm happy that you picked up and appreciate you doing this while you're at the gym. I read recently that you said, and I know that you're not trying to make excuses here, but this stuff is of interest, that was the worst weight cut of your career leading up to that fight against Justin back in August. Could you tell us about that? What exactly happened and what went wrong?
Yeah, first of all, let me clear this up real quick, because this shit makes me not want to do interviews with certain media stations.
Okay.
Because then they start, what do they call that shit, clickbait or whatever? They start putting these damn titles on their shit. James Vick said he had the worst weight cut ever, acting like I made an excuse of why I lost the fight on a weight cut. And never once was any of those interviews did I say that shit. You know, so the way they try to type it up to get clicks for themselves, you know, was trying to make me look bad. I don't like that. You know, I lost because he hit me with a fucking haymaker overhand right, and, you know, probably the most powerful punch he has in his arsenal right on my chin. That's why I lost. It didn't have shit to do with the weight cuts. I mean, it's not, if you get dropped with a jab or something like that and knocked out, you can say some shit like that. But when you're eating, you know, literally the biggest punch in a guy's arsenal who has like a 85-90% knockout ratio, then yeah, of course, you know, you got caught, you know? But yeah, it was the worst weight cut I've ever had. To be honest with you, you know, in the past, I've cheated my diet 100%. I've cheated it. And, it's hard, you know, everyone's always like, oh, you should move up. It's hard to tell someone to move up in weight when they've never followed the program and they've still never missed weight, you know? So I've cheated the diet in the past and I've been really strict this time and my weight's quite a bit better than usual. So I'm very optimistic about this weight cut.
When you say you cheated the diet, like how? Were you just eating bad food or you just weren't – like what exactly were you doing?
Well, you know, Lockhart, so George called me out on the Joe Rogan podcast. My nutritionist, George Lockhart, we're really good friends and everything. And, you know, I was definitely, I wasn't mad or anything that he called me out. You know, he's telling the truth. You know, I'm a sugar addict. You know, I have a really bad sweet tooth. And, you know, just, you know, I'm from a Southern family. You know, we eat tons of sugar, fried foods and stuff. And I've gotten past the fried foods, but I've really, you know, had a problem with the sugar, you know, and now. I can eat healthy food all day. I can eat grilled chicken and broccoli for dinner every day, but then I want a freaking pint of ice cream. So I've had a bad sweet tooth, but I've really pretty much controlled that this whole camp and I've did good. You know, I went a long time, you know, in this camp without eating any sugar at all.
Wow. So were you doing that like in the days leading up to your fight? Were you sabotaging yourself by having sugar, having sweets, even though you're starting to cut weight?
And not the days leading up, but definitely a couple of weeks before when I wasn't supposed to be, you know, I would go get stuff. You know, they have like a lot of, I would get ice cream and stuff like that. They have a place here on the East Coast called Rita's. It's a frozen ice and custard place. I would always go there several days a week. And I wasn't eating like huge portions, but I mean, it was quite a few calories when you're putting all the toppings in there and I'm cheating, you know, I 100% know that.
And as far as the actual weight cut, like the hours leading up to the weigh-in back in August, how bad was it? Was there a point where you weren't going to make weight or weren't going to make it to the scale?
See, and that's the problem because I'm so mentally strong that I know as long as George is there or has someone there, I'm going to make weight. As long as I have someone there to help me, I know I'm not going to miss the weight. You know what I'm saying? So, no, there was never a doubt of me making weight, but it was painful. It was painful. My head was hurting. I felt just horrible. It was the worst feeling I ever had, you know? And I was like, I'm not going to be that dude who, you know, if it gets to a point where I follow the program the way I'm supposed to, and then the weight cuts are like that 100%, I'm going to move up. You know what I'm saying? It's not that I'm, you know, it's not that I'm afraid to move up and fight guys at 170. It's just, you know, I've had to win 9 fights in a row just to get where I'm at. You know, if I moved up, I have to start all over again. You know, it's because even though 155 has the most guys in the world in the weight class, 170 has the second most. So it's just a rough class for us. You know, that's why we're all hoping they open the 165 up because that I could make 165 until I'm, you know, 40 years old. You know, 155 ain't going to last more than a couple years. And I'm aware of that, but I also don't want to start at the bottom again, you know, when I've worked this hard and this long to get to where I'm at.
So if they announced today that they were going to start the 165 pound weight class, would you move up right away?
100%. Yeah, definitely.
Wow. Okay. You and many others, including perhaps our next guest, Kevin Lee. But if they don't, do you think it's a foregone conclusion that in a couple of years you will have to move up to, I mean, you're one of the biggest 155ers. You're 6'4", if not the tallest 155er. It's incredible that you continue to make 155, but do you think it's inevitable you will have to eventually move up to 170?
Yeah, I'm actually 6'3", but yeah, okay. For sure. I'm gonna have to move up in the next couple of years. You know what I'm saying? I could, you know, if I'm strict with the diet, I can still make it for a couple of years, and I want to do whatever I have to do, what's best for my career, my finances, you know, and my contract and stuff. Because, you know, that's another thing you talk about, you know, you move up, you know, and even if I fought this contract out, you know, you move up and you're not ranked, then you don't have leverage to negotiate the way I do now if I'm a top 10 fighter, you know?
Right. Isn't your contract coming to an end?
No, because I renewed it before the Gaethje fight. But after this fight on Sunday, I'll have two fights left on it.
Okay. And I know that one of the big concerns for you after the Gaethje fight was like, oh, man, now I'm going to go back down the card. I'm going to have to work my way up in the prelims. I'm assuming it felt good that they put you in the co-main event of a pretty big card, the first main card on ESPN under Kane and Ngannou. That have to, I would imagine, had to have maybe lifted your spirits, given you a vote of confidence that they still believe in you to a degree, right?
Yeah, I never thought I was going to go back to the prelims or anything, but I did. But the goal is to get main events. You know what I'm saying? And the co-main is good on, you know, this card. I'm very blessed to be on this card. This card is a great card, and I'm the co-main event on the first main card of ESPN. So this is a big spot, and a lot of eyes are going to be on this fight. So, you know, I got to go out there and perform. So it is a huge opportunity. And then maybe, you know, I turn around, win this one in great fashion. You know, I could step into another main event potentially as well.
Did you like
it's just our division is so division is so packed, and it's you don't know what's going to happen, because, you know, chances are I win this fight, I'm still going to have to fight someone ranked below me, because there's really not a lot of options above me with the way everything is played out.
That's the unfortunate thing at 155, and especially now Khabib saying that he's going to, you know, sit out until November. Do you want to see them bring in an interim belt if he's going to stay out till November?
I mean, when was the last time he fought? When was that fight?
October.
I mean, that's a year. I mean, I don't think they need to for a year. Anything past it, maybe. But is he injured, or he just says he ain't fighting?
No, he said that he's going to sit out because his friends were suspended by Nevada for a year.
Oh, yeah,
and
yeah,
he didn't
yeah.
think it was fair.
Yeah, I respect that. I respect him doing that. I don't think that the UFC can lift that suspension anytime they want, if they really want him to fight sooner, you know, for sure. So we'll see what happens. But, I mean, I respect him, you know, standing up for his friends for sure. I mean, you know, I just want to win this fight on Sunday, and I want to fight, you know, fight someone ranked above me again. You know, I'm gonna keep fighting, and, you know, I love being a fighter. This is my job, my life, and I love it.
Did you like the matchup against Paul Felder when it was presented to you?
Yeah, because it makes sense for both of us, because at this point, you know, I'm worth a fight for him because I'm ranked above him, you know, quite a bit. So, you know, he wants to fight someone ranked above him. And then for me, I'm not going to get someone ranked above me. So he brings name value to the table. You know, he has a lot of fights with some good guys, and he, you know, he has a good record, and the commentary, you know, all of that has given him a big name. So it's a win-win for both of us.
Did you see that picture that he posted yesterday? He looks to be in phenomenal shape.
No, I didn't see it. I mean, I'm sure, you know, he works with the same nutritionist I have, you know. I don't think, you know, shape has to do with, you know, he's probably always in shape. You know, he probably just was on his diet pretty good and everything, you know.
Right.
I mean, I'm leaner now than I usually am too, you know, and I'm not any better shape because I'm always in shape, you know, so.
I like the new shaved head look. This is a new thing we're going with?
Yeah. Man, well, here's the thing, man. After this last fight, you know, I was down on myself, and I'm already going thin on top. So I was like, well, the people can't already make fun of me more than they already are. Because, you know, I talked a lot of shit leading up to that Gaethje fight. So they were roasting me on social media. So I'm like, I might as well just shave it and get it all out of the way in one go. So I decided to go, you know, I just buzz it to the lowest one on the electronic razor. After this fight, I may start shaving it with the actual razor, and we'll see what happens.
I dig it. Ah, I think it looks good. So was it bad on social media afterwards?
Oh, for sure. It wasn't, you know, I'm not, you know, I expect it to be, you know, I talked a lot of shit, you know, leading up to the fight, and I wouldn't have changed that, you know, because I win that fight the way he wins that fight. I'm an overnight superstar, you know, and things drastically changed for me, but, you know, it backfired. But I mean, without me talking all that, I wouldn't have got the fight to begin with. So, you know, I don't have any regrets.
And the good thing for this fight, I'm sure it's maybe a nice change of pace. No real trash talking between you two very respectful fighters. I mean, it was pretty calm leading up to this fight, correct? Unless I missed anything.
No, for sure. And I mean, to be honest with you, you know, everyone was like, oh, well, Vic got humbled, this and that. No, I talked shit so I could get the fight. And then we had the press conference and he came at me first. So I just rebutted and my talk was better. Yeah, I talked some shit leading up to that fight, but I've never in the past disrespected a bunch of opponents. I mean, pretty much all of my opponents, we've been on good terms going into the fight pretty much. It's just, you know, nowadays, you know, like you said, you've told me before, you know, closed mouths don't get fed on it, you know, in this industry. And, everybody, you know, if you don't talk shit, you're not going to get that. You're not going to get these big fights.
So you usually have someone in mind after your fights. You always take, you know, you take full advantage of the mic time. Do you already know who you're going to talk about afterwards or not yet?
I don't, because I don't know if I'm going to say anything, to be honest with you. I mean, hopefully I have a great performance and I get that 50 G bonus. That's my goal. You know, my goal is to pay my house off. You know, I owe some money left on my house. I just bought a house about 4 or 5 months ago. And, you know, my goal is to have my house. I'll own my house free and clear after this fight. The thing is there's no one really ranked above me that I'm going to get an opportunity to fight, probably. You know, I mean, Kevin Lee, who's next, I wish I was on the show after him so I could have heard all the shit he's probably going to talk, because I remember when he saw me, when I went on his show live in New York City, I saw him at the Broadway show the night before, and he goes on there trying to act like he punked me out and shit. And I'm like, this dude is delusional, you know? But I'm not going to even try to fight him. I mean, how many times do I, there comes a point that I look pathetic, keep trying to call this guy out, you know what I mean? He's turned down 2 or 3 fights. I've been trying to fight him for 2 or 3 years now. And it comes a point that I look like a joke repeatedly calling this dude out. So if the UFC asks me to fight him, then that's fine. I'll take the fight and I'll ask for more money. Because when I wanted to fight him, I was willing to fight him at the contract I'm at. But if they're coming to me with the fight, then, you know, I want to get paid for it. But I don't care about him. And he's really the only one that's ranked above me that's not already booked. So, I'm just going to win this fight. I'm going to pay my house off. You know, I'm going to go home. I'm going to spend time with my son and my girl and, go hunting, fishing, you know, have some fun and be back in the gym, progressing my skill set and see what happens next.
James, I'm looking forward to it. Great stuff as always. I appreciate you doing this. Good luck Sunday against Paul Felder, ESPN co-main event. Can't wait. Good luck in the last couple of days here of training. And then of course, flying out to Phoenix with the weight cut and everything. I appreciate the time as always.
Yes, sir. Thank you. I appreciate it.
There he is, James Vick, one of the top contenders, still at 155 pounds. So let's not waste any time, and let's move along now to our next guest, the man he was just talking about. Is he ready? Can we go to Kevin Lee? Let's go to Kevin Lee. Everyone talks about Kevin Lee these days. The most wanted man at 155 pounds, the Motown phenom. Kevin, how are you?
I'm good. The most wanted man, but can't seem to find a fight. How does that work out, Ariel?
It's weird. Did you hear James just talking about you?
Nah, I only came in on the very end of y'all conversation, so I just kind of seen him looking like a thumb a little bit, but I ain't hear nothing what he was saying.
He's not happy with you, which is kind of a theme, I think, at 155. Why does everyone have a problem with you, Kevin?
I don't know what I do to James. What's James mad about? I mean, I don't know. What did he say? What did he say?
He said he saw you the night before the New York card on Broadway, and you were acting all hard, and he feels like it's a little bit pathetic that he keeps having to call you out, and you won't fight him, so he's not going to call you out anymore because he didn't want to seem like a bully. All this stuff and more. Did you know that he wanted to fight you?
Yeah, I know James been looking for the fight. Me too. If the time and place would have been right, then we can make the fight. I tried to make it before he fought this fight with Paul Felder. If either one of these guys would have fell off, I definitely would have stepped in. But, you know, he's got another. He should be worried about Paul. Why are all these guys so worried about me? I don't really get it. I'm a competitor at the end of the day. I'm not really ever chasing no man. I'm chasing after a title. So I let them keep chasing me, and we'll see how this whole thing play out.
Okay. I guess it's a testament to you, right? Once everyone wants to fight you, that means you're doing something right.
Right, yeah. I mean, it means I'm in good business, so I can't really complain about it too much, but I'm looking for a fight and for it to be immediate. He's got to worry about Paul Felder. If he comes out of this totally undamaged and he's ready to take another fight soon, then go ahead and step up. But I'm looking to fight, you know, end of March, early April. And if he's willing to accept that time frame, then come on, let's do it. Like, it ain't nothing to me.
And as of right now, just to be clear, you don't have a fight, correct?
No, I've offered to fight everybody. You know, a lot of guys in my position, they try and look above the rankings and fight somebody that's ranked higher than them, and fight the right smart fight and all that. I opened up the challenge to everybody at the beginning of this year, and not many people have stepped up. Michael Johnson, he tried to call me out. I get the call and he say he's hurt right after. You know, I've got Islam right now who's calling me, so I'm accepting for that fight. I'll take any fight that comes my way, really.
Speaking of Islam Makhachev, he was on our show just last week talking about you, Kevin. In case you missed it or others missed it, want to play you this sound and then get your reaction, okay?
Yeah, let's do it.
Here's Islam Makhachev last week on the show.
Kevin Lee, speak too much. He don't do nothing, but he just speak. I don't know. I ask him, we see about this guy. I don't know. Maybe five times, 10 times. He never give me answer about fight. I want to fight with this guy because he say a lot of trash about Dagestan fighters, about Khabib, about my team. I want to smash this guy. Doesn't matter when, doesn't matter where.
So what do you think of that, Kevin?
I mean, you know, like I said, a lot of these guys, I don't even get it. You know, they paying attention to me. All I'm focused on is me. When I look around at the division, I see a whole lot of, you know, I see me. I see the only competition is myself. So that's all I'm really focused on. The fight with Islam, we can make that fight happen. I'm interested in it. Ali has hit me up multiple times. He called me and he's like, yeah, you want the fight? I'm like, come on, let's. What is all the talk about? He say I'm talking and talking, but I've got more fights than anybody in this division in the same amount of time. And I'm looking to do it again. So the only hold up, and you hearing it come straight from my mouth, is on his end. I'm ready to make the fight happen April 13th, March 30th, whatever date they want. Let's make it happen. I'm just waiting on the call. Islam is a good challenge. You know, a lot of people say he go head to head with Khabib all day, every day. I've been talking about them forever, and it's still gonna be that same way. It ain't nothing gonna be changed. So if Islam want the action, then we can go in and do it.
So just to be clear, you're in, and you're saying the holdup's on his end? The guy who's calling you out, the holdup's on his end? How does that make sense?
This keeps happening. You know, Michael Johnson was the same way. He called me out on Twitter, and all these guys are trying to make fights through Twitter. And you know, I don't even really be on social media like that. Islam tried the same thing. I don't know. He called me out a week ago. I hit up Sean Shelby right away. I'm like, let's make the fight happen. And I still haven't heard no answer back. So I'm assuming that the holdup is all on his end. His manager is with it. Sean is with it. Everybody else is with it. He just ain't said nothing yet. I don't get how they keep doing that. But I'm what can I do? I'm waiting on a call.
All right. And
look, if you want his ass beat, it's nothing to me. It's really nothing to me. Like, this is what I do. You know, I've got a lot of offers to do other things, to go out, try and act, you know, to this company wants to spot and this company wants to do this. And I don't give a fuck about none of that. And I made that very clear. I'm here to fight and I'm looking for a fight. So what else can I do?
It seems like it's a little personal because of, you know, I guess some of the things that you said about Khabib and the Russian people. Are you concerned that this might get a little too heated, like the Conor Khabib fight? Because as you saw in that clip or heard in that clip, he said that he's a little bit bothered by some of the things that you said in the past.
Then that's on him. You know, all I do is speak the truth, and I just tell things the way that I see it. You know, I do still think all the Russians, and I mean, and there's a lot of them that come down, they train with me, and, you know, they move around with me, they talk, we laugh, we kick it. You know, they ain't really got nothing to say to my face because I'm going to tell them the truth again. It's, you know, the emotional, I think a little soft, and I think that's what you're going to see during the fight. So, if you ask me an opinion about them, then I'm going to give you my opinion. I think I could beat any of them. So that's the only, I'm just going to tell you my truth. And if he ain't with that, then fight me.
I thought maybe John Jones would be next. John Jones taking shots at your attire. What's up with that?
Yeah. I mean, what, like I said, it can't be in my book, there can't be no disrespect without retaliation. and that's how I'm going to give it to him. With John, you know, John's got a lot of other shit he got to worry about right now. You know, I kind of poking at him a little bit and poking the bear just to see what I can get off. I'm not scared of none of these motherfuckers. Like, that's just at the end of the day. You know, the judges can say what they is, but I'm not afraid to fight any man.
By the way, what happened with the grappling match, the Dylan Danis grappling match? I thought that had some legs to it.
It did, but I became uninterested, to be honest with you. You know, Dylan, I'm looking for a big challenge. Especially after that last fight, the way the judges kind of stole that one from me. That's been my only focus is kind of getting that right and getting that back. Dylan, I mean, it's out there to be had, and you know, it's kind of like if I got a free weekend, then I'll go ahead and do it. But it's not something that I'm going to really like put some energy towards and you know, really put my focus on. It's you know, it's Dylan Danis. It's pretty easy work if I want it, but. You know, it's kind of, I leave that on the back burner. I focus on the big meal first.
So a month and a half later, you feel like you should have won that fight against Ally Quinta?
Yeah, I mean, and I'm still feeling that same way. There are some adjustments that I could have made. and some adjustments that I'm going to make following this, in this next fight. That's why I'm more – that's what I just want to – I want to get that itch back and fight again because there are still some adjustments that I should have made. I still thought that I won the fight, but, you know, when I look at it again and see that I took my foot off the gas pedal a little too early, and, you know, he kind of, like, played up to the antics a little bit, doing the screaming. And in my head, I was laughing the whole time while he was kind of standing there screaming and not really doing much or nothing. So, I don't know. Again, I'm looking for another fight. So, that's all I'm focused on.
What are some of the adjustments that you need to make?
I thought I could have made adjustments in the corner, especially going into that fifth round. You know, I thought the fourth round was probably his best, where I took my foot off the gas, thinking that I had the first three in the bag. And there was no adjustment in my corner to tell me to go out there and for sure win this fifth round. And that's what should have happened if I'm really looking at it from a, you know, from a competitive standpoint. I've got to fight with that championship mindset the whole time. And I said it before the fight. The only thing that was going to beat me was myself. And I think once my mental catches up with my physical, then nobody's going to be able to stop me. And just in that fight, the fifth round, I thought was a little bit of a mental lap, especially in my corner.
So are you going to change corners for this fight coming up?
I don't know yet. I truly don't know. Right now, I'm focused solely on beating the fuck out of somebody. And that's what it's going to be. You know, I think I've shied away too much from my natural fighting style. You know, that fight, I fought a lot as a southpaw, backing up, trying to fight as a counter striker. When my whole career, that hasn't been me. My natural fighting style, that isn't me. I'm more of a come forward, kind of stand in your face, pressure, and just looking to really hurt you. And I tried to shy away too much from that. So, you know, yeah, there will be some adjustments made in the corner between me and how we communicate, but mostly the adjustments is going to come from me and just getting back into how I really fight. That's why I really don't care who I fight next. It can be James Vick. It can be Islam. It can be Michael Johnson. It can be Charles Oliveira called me out on TV a couple of days ago. So, you know, any of these guys can get it. It truly don't matter to me.
By the way, it's a staple every time you're on the show. Al watches and texts me, and he said that he wanted to let you know that Al Jermaine has moved out of their New York home, and you can come live with him and train with them for your next fight. You're more than welcome to do that.
Nice. The buddies over there finally done stood up the Rat Pack. You know, nah, I can't take no more of Gian Levante. What's his name? Gian Vante? Or
Volante.
I can't take... bro, I have a heart attack trying to navigate the point now. I'm good. You know, they can have their little butt parties and all that. They can have that amongst themselves. I'm good on this side of the country.
All right, fair enough. And we're staying with 155? We're not going to move up?
Yeah, absolutely. I've got some offers to move up, but, you know, I started this game with nothing. Really, like, truly, honestly, like, you know, I started it with begging somebody on ESPN to talk to me. And now I'm in a totally different position. But the goal is still the same. And I'm going to be at 155 for now until I get that belt.
You weren't begging me, Kevin. I wasn't at ESPN, all right? I've been on the bandwagon a lot. I know we've had... I know. I don't want to open
on,
that.
Come on, Ariel.
But we good now. We're good. It's all good. It's all good. I had to. That was too easy. That was too easy. So would it be fair to say that Islam's in the driver's seat? Like, would he be the front runner? Is that what you're feeling right now? Or could it be someone totally different?
Yeah, I'm looking at Islam. Okay. You know, that makes the most amount of sense to me. You know, he's kind of the loudest barking for it, too. And I like that fight. So, Islam, I've already put in my offer April 13th on that pay-per-view card. But I've heard that they wanted it March 30th, which I'm cool with that too. It really don't matter. But April 13th, me and Islam, let's go ahead and get this over with. I've got a war against Russia anyway going. So, let's keep this thing hot.
All right. I want to see it. I think it would be great. You go through Islam, then you get Khabib next. Why not? It's a nice little path to the champion. Kevin, appreciate the time as always, my man. Good luck getting the fight. And by the way, is your eye okay? It looks like your left eye is a little bit, what's going on over there?
You know, training hard. What can I do?
All right.
You know me.
Okay. Rest up, Kevin. We'll talk to you soon. All the best. There he is, the Motown Phenom himself. Great stuff from him. It looks like we just made a fight there between Islam Makhachev and Kevin Lee. Why not? You hear that, Sean Shelby? We're doing your work for you, okay? So take some notes and make the fight happen. All right, quickly, before we get to our in-studio guests, let me tell you about our good friends over at Stamps.com as you look at the lineup for this Sunday on ESPN. As you know, postage rates have gone up again. Thankfully, Stamps.com can ease the pain with big discounts off post office retail rates. With Stamps.com, you save 5 cents off every first-class stamp and up to 40% off priority mail. That kind of savings really adds up, especially for small businesses. Plus, Stamps.com is completely online, which saves you some time. No more inconvenient trips to the post office. Stamps.com automatically calculates and prints the exact amount of postage you need for every letter or package you send. You'll never overpay or underpay again. Stamps.com brings you all the services of the U.S. Postal Service right to your fingertips. Buy and print official U.S. postage for any letter, any package, any class of mail using your own computer and printer. Now, Stamps.com makes it really easy for you. They'll send you a free digital scale, automatically calculates exact postage. Stamps.com will even help you decide the best class of mail based on your needs. Stamps.com saves you money. They give you postage discounts you can't get at the post office, including 5 cents off every first class stamp. Anything you can do at the post office, you can now do from your desk for less. Right now, our listeners get a special offer that includes a 4-week trial plus free postage and a digital scale. See for yourself why over 700,000 small businesses use Stamps.com. Just go to Stamps.com, click on the microphone at the top of the homepage, and type in my name, Ariel, A-R-I-E-L. That's Stamps.com. Enter the code Ariel.
Everyone, I'm the one, the only...
Michael Venom! Bang!
Michael Venom Page, look at that man. 13-0 as a pro, faces Paul Daly in the biggest grudge match in UK MMA history this Saturday, February 16th, just a few minutes from here, in Uncasville, Connecticut, the Mohegan Sun. 11 victories, as you can see, via stoppage, but nothing bigger than the fight this Saturday. I am so honored to have this man, Venom Page, in studio. Wow. Man, look at you in the flesh.
Oh, yes. I'm here.
Thank you for coming. I appreciate it.
No problem.
First time at ESPN?
Yes.
What's it like?
I've been with you, you know.
Yeah, but that's the old days.
That's the old days, man.
Look at us. This is moving on up.
Man, you're looking good.
It's good, right?
Yeah, yeah.
What have you done so far? Have you done anything fun here? It's like a sports wonderland.
I had a previous interview, and then, yeah, just been chilling, waiting for you, man.
Okay. And so we are here, fight week.
Yep.
Uncasville, Connecticut, not that far from here. It's like 40 minutes or so.
Yep.
Can I just ask right off the top, and they're going to get mad at me for asking this, but I have to. How is the biggest fight in UK MMA history happening in Connecticut?
It's, you know what? It's just one of those things. It's, you know, it's the higher-ups that make the decisions. The fans wanted it in the UK. We, you know, I'm sure both myself and the other guy wanted it in the UK. And either way, we're here now. And it's going to happen. It's still going to be just as exciting. So I'm looking forward to it.
Are you bummed a little bit? Like, do you feel like the atmosphere, like the fight could have just been elevated a little bit? It could have been bigger had it been in the UK, anywhere in the UK?
100%. I think anywhere in the UK makes sense. Anywhere in the UK, as you say, it does make sense. I think there's a lot of people that's been willing to come out, fly over here because of the, you know, how big this fight actually is. So people are willing to make that effort, and it's very difficult to kind of move people in the UK, in the UK MMA world, to actually want to travel to go and see these fights. So that already says how, you know, how big this fight is. So anywhere in the UK would have just, there's a lot of like local celebrities there that are there that's talking about it now.
Wow.
They would have been in attendance. I think it does change the, you know, the attendance. It doesn't necessarily change the how big it's going to be anyway, but the attendance, yeah, definitely.
You trained for the fight back home, correct?
Yep.
London Shoe Fighters.
Mm-hmm.
Did it feel different? Like, is there more buzz back home for the fight? Are people coming up to you, picking sides? You know, this is like civil war, right?
100%. There is a lot of people excited. I think I usually get to the party late in terms of the excitement side. I always kind of, it's usually when this is all happening and, you know, there's a lot of fight things going on around me that I start to get the buzz a bit. But normally I'm just like, oh, everyone's like, oh, how you feeling for the fight, man? Yeah, we're really pumped up and this and that. And for me, I'm just like, yeah, you know, when it happens, it happens. I'm a bit more chilled, but now I'm starting to feel it.
And then you add to the fact that they just signed the Sky Sports deal.
Oh yeah,
which I think some of the American listeners might not
understand
how big of a deal this is. Explain to them how big of a deal this is.
Well, it's like you know, ESPN watches, you know, and most people over here will watch all their sports on ESPN. It's the same for us in the UK, but it's on Sky Sports.
Wow.
And that's the equivalent, shall I say.
Yeah.
So for us to be on Sky Sports is massive.
Yeah, and it's live. This exactly. is what they've wanted the whole time.
We've been screaming about this for a very long time, and it always comes up, especially when I'm fighting. A lot of people are like, so why can't we get to watch it over here live? And I know, again, there's a lot more to it that goes on in the background, but they finally, you know, made it happen, and in a big way.
So let's talk about the impetus of this feud, this issue between, you won't even say his name. You won't even say, I know you like to call him another name.
I got a different name for him.
Yes,
so.
But you won't call him Paul. You hate him that much.
Paula,
that's right.
There you go.
You know, my friend who I think you know, the great UK journalist, Shamat Karsan,
yeah,
who sent me a picture just right before the show of you two together, mm-hmm. I think in 2015.
Yeah, yeah.
You seemed like you were boys. You seemed like you were cool. Where did it all start? How did it all start between you two?
Yeah, well, you know, as you say, you know, there's probably going to be a few pictures of us knocking around in that fashion. And we were cordial. You know, Paula has actually said before that we weren't friends. He wasn't a person I would call up and stuff away from the mixed martial arts, but anytime we were together having to do anything, there was no problems. In my eyes, there were no problems. We've done multiple interviews together where we're both sat there and people ask that question. They're like, oh, you know, what would happen if you two fight? And he would near enough say the same thing that I would say, like, you know, I'm not chasing the fight. If it happens, you know, may the best man win kind of thing. And that's it. And, after one of his, victories, he landed a really nice jump knee. I think he was doing an interview and mentions me in just a very different light to what he had been saying before. And it was along the lines of, I'm Mayweather. I'm the bigger guy. I'm the better fighter. He's not on my level. He's Adrian Broner. And it was just very belittling. And I just felt unnecessary, especially when I wasn't present to be able to say anything back. We're MMA fighters. So we're like, cool, let's just settle it in the cage. I'm very good at the social media side and started trying to force the fight a little bit because it felt like he didn't really want to have that fight. I kept pushing. And for me, he really just didn't like, especially the way I was kind of hitting him up online. He didn't like that. And it just kind of grew the feud between us.
Okay. So in your mind, he started it.
No, 100%. 100%.
With that comment, like nothing happened behind the scenes to that comment.
No, it wasn't. It doesn't derive from anything massive.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, nothing crazy happened in the background. It was just that comment. And I actually wanted to, when I heard it, I saw it in a written article. And then everyone was like, oh, did you hear what he said? I was like, no, when I see him next, I'll ask him, like, what was that about? But then I saw a video and I was like, there's nothing for us to talk about. No problem. Let's make it happen.
And then, so that's probably off the top of my head, I'm going to guess like 2.5 or so years ago, maybe even more, right? This has been going on for a while.
I'd probably say just, like, two years ago.
I think was it after the win over Brendan Ward?
Yes.
When he knocked him out. Okay.
Yes,
and so a little over 2 years ago. And then we get to the Rory McDonald fight.
Yeah.
And he loses that fight.
Yeah.
But then it seems like it reached a whole different level because this happened. I do think that we have the footage of it. It's coming here any moment. So here's Paul talking after that fight. And there's you, as you can see.
Chilling, looking amazing, obviously.
And he's walking back. And what happens here? What's going on?
He decided to make a bigger deal out of... I actually don't know why he actually made that decision to do that. In my opinion, Paul's a very childish person, a very impulsive person. Look at his history. He's been kicked off the UFC before through that very same impulsive action, and especially when he loses. So he's almost like just, he's a very sore loser. Even now, my coach is like, you know, after the fight, all goes to plan. You have to stay on your guard. It's the fight's not over because the bell's done. Mm. He's that kind of person that it may continue. It may spill over. So you have to be on your A game. It's not a shaking hands thing afterwards. It's not like, yeah, oh, well done, or, you know, congrats, or, you know, good fight. you have to be on your A game the whole time. And that's because of his personality. And it's exactly the same there. He came out of the cage. He's mentioned that, you know, he saw me talking trash on the outside, but you see the video. I wasn't saying anything. You know, the camera cut to me after he started saying what he was saying. And that's exactly what I was doing. I was just walking up and down like, cool. Again, you got me stuck because I can't respond. You're the one in the cage. You're the one with the mic. There's no point me saying anything. Then he decided to come out and do that. And it seemed pathetic to me. And I didn't even make a move because I got to run for 100 people to do it. It seems fake.
Right.
Now, anytime we've been sat together, and this is after, he hasn't even tried to look in my direction in the wrong way or be as abrasive the way he was. So I just find it fake.
The whole thing.
From his point of view, again, he just tries to big himself up to be something that he's just
when the lights are on.
When the lights are on, yeah. And again, when the lights are on is when he probably gets the most embarrassed, and that's why he acts out.
Ah, interesting. And so you've actually been with him behind the scenes, yeah. No cameras,
yeah.
And there's nothing going on.
Well, there's tension there.
There's no bravado.
He doesn't act up.
Trash talk.
No, he's not saying anything.
Okay,
but that's because there's nobody between me and you right now.
Right.
So if you want to make it happen, we can make it happen.
And what's he saying to you there? Do you even remember? Like it looked like he was saying something.
With the crowd?
Yeah.
In honesty, you don't even see me in the picture because I was that far away.
Okay.
So that's what I mean. It seemed like a very unnecessary move. And I've mentioned it before, but there's two exits to the cage. He had already spotted where I was. And he left at the furthest exit instead of coming. If he came out the opposite way, I would have been literally, like, say, 10 people away from him.
Interesting.
And he went out the furthest exit to then do all of that. I just felt it, again, it's just, I stood there the whole time. I just found it funny. And that was it.
My one concern about this fight was, to me, it's the best rivalry in Bellator, and it feels like it's Bellator made in the sense that it's not taking a rivalry from a story that happened in a different world. Was born in Bellator, and it plays out in Bellator, which is great, which is something they haven't had, to be honest.
Yeah.
But it took so long, right? Yeah. It took so long, and I thought for a minute, it's just never going to happen.
We spoke about that.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
Why did it take so long?
From before then, let's bring it further back. The first time Paula's name was given to me in terms of contract, like, you know, would you be willing to take this fight, was I was supposed to fight Fernando Gonzalez in London.
Mm-hmm.
He was supposed to fight, I can't even remember who it was now. He had a fighter as well. Now, his fighter had pulled out probably about 3 weeks before.
Okay.
Fernando Gonzalez, for whatever reason, I think it's like visa issues or something, he couldn't come over either. So Bellator were kind of like panicking a little bit because like two of the main fights that they wanted in the UK. So I was contacted by one of the, you know, the higher ups, and they said, you know, would you be willing to take this fight? We said yes before you finished the sentence.
The Paul Daly fight.
The Paul Daly fight.
On 3 weeks notice.
Yeah. We're okay. Can we make this happen?
Yeah.
And we said yes, no problem. We were just waiting for, you know, the other side to kind of comply. Because I had to turn everything around very quickly, they just come back and said that he's not interested. He said it's too much of a change. I think he was fighting a wrestler. And at the time, I didn't find it like he was being scared. It does make sense. If you have been training for somebody specific, that's a completely different style to the other person. To get a last-minute change like that, if you have the choice, is difficult. So he ended up fighting who he fought. I ended up fighting a cyborg. Technically, things worked out
right. The
way it's supposed to work out. And then, again, obviously, our feud starts to, you know, go from there. And after every interaction that we had like that, Bellator was like, okay, let's make it happen. I'm like, yeah, let's make it happen. And he's like, oh, no, not yet. Okay. So then he has another fight that he wins. And after that, he's calling me out again. So we're like, yeah, okay, look, I get sent the contract. Yeah, no problem. Let's go. He says to Bellator, no, he doesn't want to do it yet. And there was just multiple excuses as to why we shouldn't. Some people say maybe it worked out for the best because, you know, it makes it build a bit longer and so on and so forth. But I think it would have been as big anyway.
Right.
You know what I mean? And in honest opinion, because the tournament's now involved, I think that had a massive part to play as to why it's in America instead of the UK. If he actually took the fight when he was supposed to, especially after all of that nonsense, if he took the fight then we would be in the UK right now having this fight, and it would be a massive fight.
Right.
But is what it is.
You had the press conference in the UK last week. Mm-hmm. Scott Coker was sitting between you guys. What is that? Like, what is the... I'm not in the room there. Mm-hmm. I watched it. And you guys, like, those... You had one of those before when you weren't even fighting each other. Yeah. And, like, you could feel the tension watching it online. Like, you could, I could feel it coming out of my screen. What is it like for you to sit right next to him with Coker sitting in between you?
Oh, it's fun, man.
You enjoy it?
I love it.
You brought out props and everything this
time. Oh, yeah. No, definitely. I take inspiration from you.
Yeah, so thank you.
So I definitely I enjoy those moments because I can be frustrating as a fighter, let alone as a person. I can frustrate people. I can get into people's heads, and I feel like that's exactly what I was able to do then. He's trying to backtrack now, which I don't understand. He's trying to play it all calm, or there's no real issues between us, and playing Mr. Nice Guy. I don't get it, but it comes across fake because the second I say anything, he bites. Like it's like there's an immediate explosion in him, and it is what it is. I think I'm living in his head right now, and he's it's gonna take its toll through this whole, you know, promotional period, and then when we get to the fight.
I love Scott, but I think he's very nervous in between you two.
100%.
You notice that?
I feel, to be fair, just because, like you said, the energy in there, and a lot of people in the room said the same thing, the energy in the room, and as you said, you can see it, you could feel it through your laptop. It wasn't nice. So I understand why, and especially when you have to sit directly in between it, I get why you would feel that way.
Why didn't they square you off?
That's exactly the reason. I think Scott made a call that, you know, it's going to escalate from
really
it. And like I said, in all honesty, I think the distrust lies with Paula because of his impulsive actions.
Right.
Now, if it was myself versus somebody else that still had that kind of energy, I think they understand that I'm professional enough to not do this or not do that. But with him, they don't know, and they're just unsure. So instead of even making that, letting that happen, they're just like, let's just leave it at that. I think everyone's happy with what's just happened, what they've just seen. Let's just leave it at that. And I think it was a good call.
Do you think something would have happened?
Potentially, yes.
Really?
Yeah.
You think he would have ignited it?
Could have come from anywhere.
Really? Okay. Because afterwards, something did kind of happen. Didn't you guys like start yelling at each other?
Yeah, I was just getting in his face.
Okay.
Because again, there's in my head now. Again, there's not many people between us,
right?
And I like to show that all of what you saw is just nonsense in my opinion. Because if it's genuine, like I remember when Rampage was fighting King Mo, they had to put those two in different hotels. You couldn't have them in the same hotel.
Mm-hmm.
Because again, you could feel it's honesty. It was there. These two guys. But for him, again, he's just very in the moment, under the lights, not aside of that.
But would it be fair to say that there is a part of you that doesn't like this man? Like there is,
oh no,
there is animosity there, right?
I can't stand him.
Yeah, okay.
I think he's a disgusting person, disrespectful. I got loads to say.
Why do you think he's disgusting?
I just don't like him as a person.
Okay,
at all. And again, I find him, like I said, even his attitude, in terms of how it all came up, just very snake-like, and I just don't like dishonest people like that. So just
interesting
for
you to say snake-like, because that's
But mine's the venom. Mine's what comes out of the snake.
That's right.
but yeah, I just don't like the way he carries himself, and
When you were coming up, obviously he's been in the game a lot longer than you. Was this someone that you actually admired? Did you look up to him?
No, only because I didn't watch. And in all honesty, I'm just going to say it like that. It's only because I wasn't watching MMA.
Okay.
I was a typical ignorant fan. And even when I started, and I've always been like that from a young age. Like I was always an athletic person, but never cared to watch any of the sports themselves. I had too much energy. I was like, why am I sitting here watching it? I could be outside playing, or I could.
Right, right.
So even like, you know, I'm a Man United supporter. Basically because my best friend at the time when I was young was just like, just say you support Man United, because I support Man United.
Okay.
And it's only later on, I'm talking like 10 years later, when I actually started watching sports in terms of football and stuff, and playing the games and all of that. Then I said, I just continued to say, yeah, no, I'm a Man United supporter, but I didn't really know the history at all. You know what I mean? It was just because of that. And
sure.
It's the same thing with the mixed martial arts. I got into it and didn't really watch it. And so there's a lot of people. It's only the main names that used to come out, because again, MMA wasn't massive in the UK. It's only the main names, the Anderson Silvers, Tito Ortiz, Chuck Liddell. Like, Chuck Liddell I used to watch a few times before because I had heard about the feud between him and Tito and stuff. So there's only the odd few people that kind of came out, but I never used to follow them. It was just when the fight was happening, I'd watch it, I'd tune in. And that was it. But maybe if I was in the sport, he would have been one of the people that I would have looked up to in that, because he was doing a lot. He was a big name. But I can honestly say I wasn't.
Now that you're in the sport, have you ever gone back and looked at, you know, Simtex in his prime? No.
Oh, no. There's a lot of fights that I keep saying I need to catch up on.
Yeah.
Just even in like just the major shows, the major fights that have happened, I need to kind of catch back up on them because I started so late. I just haven't.
Okay.
But, I think his focal point, I think for the rest of his life is going to be the fight that he had with Diaz. Mm. And that is it. But it's a fight that he lost. So it's weird to kind of live off the hype of a fight that you've lost. Although it was a good back and forward fight. And this is what I feel like he's annoyed about. He's never quite been able to just be known as the successful person. I think he hates the fact that I've kind of just come on in a short space of time and kind of cause what he would like to have. So I feel like there's been jealousy there from before that has only just started to come out because of our feud.
Would it be fair to say, so you're 13-0 as a pro,
yeah,
MMA. Obviously, you've competed in other combat sports, but you've never quite felt this way about an opponent going into a fight?
Oh, no, never.
It's never been this personal, right?
No, not at all. Not at all. Most, like I said, I'm just enjoying myself when I'm in there. The whole reason I started this is because I was tired of the kickboxing world and not getting anything for it, for my achievements there. And decided to go into something different. And I was like, I'm only going to continue doing it if my style works. I'm not going to try and adapt and change. I've done this particular style for over 20 years. I'm not going to try and be an MMA fighter. I'm going to be myself. So if it doesn't work, it doesn't work. So let's just go on this journey and see how far I can go. And that's all it was. That's it's never been like, yeah, I'm gonna be this, I'm gonna be that. It was literally let me just see how far I can go with this style, and that's it.
Okay, so we know that style. You're fun to watch. You're the human highlight reel, right? Must see TV. But because it's so personal, because there's emotion involved, is there any chance we're going to see a different Michael Page? Are you worried that the emotions will take over? You know what I mean? Sometimes this happens.
Yeah, no, 100%, and I'm making sure that I do the same me.
Okay.
If something else comes out, I immediately make the fight a 50-50 fight. And then I'm not in control of the result. I'm not in control of the rhythm of the fight because I'm fighting on an impulse. I'm fighting on emotion. I will make mistakes. And regardless of anything I can say negative about him, he's a person you don't really want to make a mistake with. He's got big power in his hands. And he's had his success because of that. So I have to be very realistic. Again, I like to act out and chat a little bit, but realistically, when it comes down to strategy and game plan, I need to be on my A game. And regardless of anything, the W hurts him more than anything else. I don't care how it happens. If you just crawl across that line, the W is what's going to be more hurtful.
We're talking to Michael Venom Page, one of the very best fighters in the world, undefeated, returns to action Saturday. It's on DAZN, exclusively on DAZN. Bellator has an event on Friday that airs on DAZN and Paramount Network. Both events happening at the Mohegan Sun in Uncasville, Connecticut. It's Paul Daly versus Michael Venom Page, first round fight in the welterweight tournament, which has already begun. I want to offer my condolences on the passing of your father. I'm very sorry to hear about that. And I saw what you wrote about him, very heartfelt on your Instagram. And I like that you said you weren't writing this for anyone.
Yeah.
You were writing it for yourself.
100%, yeah.
So I'm very sorry about that. Was there any chance that you were not going to fight as a result of what happened?
Potentially, yes. It's hard to say because my mind was not my mind at the time. It wasn't in the right place. My one saving grace, I can say, that kind of helped me through that time was, you know, the London Street Fighters, my coaches, because it became a place where I can switch off a little bit, get away from my emotions. My teammates were great. They were all just themselves. They continue to just be themselves. Obviously, everybody was upset and hurt by it, but they continue to be themselves. And one of the hardest things was, you know, going anywhere and be reminded of it because everyone's giving you sad eyes.
Yeah, you know what I mean?
It's difficult, but I can go into the gym and just continue training. And that is what allowed me to be in the condition I am to still be able to fight as well. Because if I was, you know, just went into a cave somewhere and just sat with my emotions, I wouldn't have been physically ready for the fight. Mentally, I wasn't ready for the fight, but I was physically ready. Okay. And then we just kind of, as the time got closer, I said to myself, no, my dad was equally looking forward to this fight. And he would have wanted me to fight. You know, he'd probably be kicking himself if I was to make the decision based on him. He'd be more angry with me, annoyed with me, if I didn't take the fight. So 100% I have to take it.
Did you take time off? Did you like stay away from the gym even, or did you
I needed to be somewhere. And that's what I mean. They helped me through. I needed to be doing something. I needed to be physical. Yeah, it's a weird place to be in.
Right.
I needed to be physical.
So I would imagine this was probably one of, if not the hardest training camp of your career, right? Mm-hmm. To deal with not just the emotions of this very personal fight, mm-hmm. but for this to happen as well.
Yeah, 100%. It's like I said, I've never been in this situation ever before. I'm hoping I'd never, ever have to experience that again.
Right.
Yeah, it's definitely the most difficult thing. But again, my teammates, my family are absolutely amazing. A lot of people can have when you have a lot of siblings, sometimes you don't get on with all of them, but all of us are great. It just makes everything that much easier. And my girlfriend as well, I've been with her a long time now, and she was a massive support going through that, and she had to take a lot of stick as well through just me being annoyed at just everything,
right?
And she was right there the whole time supporting me. So I've got good people around me, and it's, in all honesty, if I didn't, I don't believe I would have made this fight.
And for those that don't know, your father is the reason why you got into all this, right?
100%. Yeah. Weird enough, it's my mom and my dad.
Okay.
Both of them did the martial arts, and but it was my dad that was coaching me specifically. So yeah, it's like the whole reason I'm even capable, I even have these abilities, is because of him. So this is why it makes it that much harder. It's weird going to a place, going to the gym, and it being a peaceful place, but also a constant reminder,
right,
of why I'm even allowed to be, you know, be here. But yeah, so
the photo that you posted, where was that? Where it was a photo of him and all the flowers.
That was at the funeral.
That was at the funeral. Okay.
Yeah.
Wow. So, and that was in January, correct?
Yeah.
Okay.
So we had a funeral in the UK, and then he is from Trinidad.
Okay.
And his my grandfather had passed away, and he wanted to be buried with him.
Okay.
So we ended up going over there as well and having and that's when I actually did the post, because after I got back from there was when I first accepted that it's true.
It was a reality.
It's a reality. So, yeah.
And if you don't mind me asking, it was a sudden passing, correct? Or were you expecting
it? No, we was expecting it.
Oh, really?
Say we was expecting it. You're never really expecting it.
Was he sick?
He was sick. He had cancer.
Oh, wow.
And he was fighting that. But he's that kind of guy. He's a warrior. So he's that kind of person that's like, this ain't going to get me. And even when they had given him 3 months.
Wow.
It took him a year over a year. Cause he's just like, no, I'm going to do this. He was researching. He was doing this. He was doing that. He's doing this. And that's just him. That's typically him. And I feel he sold me that dream as well. I could see him already making a comeback and, you know, being that success story. Like, wow, that happened. I could see it. And no matter how much worse he had gotten, he was still that positive attitude. And again, it was just it was nice to see that. It's nice to see that. But yeah, it wasn't sudden. He just didn't want anybody to know
anything. Okay.
He's that's how he is.
To have the fight, as you said, kind of gives you a distraction a bit, but are you at all worried that once the fight is over, then the emotions are going to come out, reality will sink
100%,
in
potentially? Like I said, I've never been here before. I don't know how I'm going to take it, how I'm going to feel at all. But I have to make sure I keep it separate in order to do my best, and put it to one side. So if the emotions come in afterwards, then that's so be it. But as long as I've done my job, then I'm happy.
Mm-hmm. By the way, I like the shirt.
Yeah.
Is this new?
Yeah, it's coming out.
New logo. Where do we get this?
It's coming. I'm just testing all of the stuff, and then we're going to be bringing them out.
You got to sell it on Fight Week. You're repping it. This is the time that people buy stuff.
I was busy winding up Paula, man.
But is this your new thing?
This is a new thing.
Nice. So, I like it. See the M
there?
Yeah.
The MVP here.
I like it. I see sometimes on your Instagram, like, people are like, when are you going to go to the UFC or the time?
All the time, not sometimes.
Okay, all the time.
All the time.
Does that get annoying?
Oh, yeah, 100%. Because, like,
you respond to some of them. You said, like, I saw someone say, like, the time is now for you to go to the UFC, and you're like, I guess your clock is wrong or something like that. It was a very good response, but it would have to be annoying because, by all accounts, you're pretty happy with Bellator.
Oh,
correct?
No, 100%. Like, they've done so much for me, and I'm 100%. I love this organization. I love what they're about. I love how they market themselves. I love just the direction that they're moving, and it just feels like the next big thing.
Right.
As big as they already are, it just feels like the next big thing in MMA. So, I'm 100% comfortable here. And yeah, it's more annoying because I could be posting about, I don't know, scrambled eggs or something, and then people would see the picture but still go off. So why are you in the UFC, man? It's right. Like, okay, we get it.
Yes, enough already.
Enough.
And do you have a long-term deal with them?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I have to say, though, and I hope they don't get mad at me for asking this, but I have to say, as a fan, you versus Israel Adesanya, which I'm sure you heard.
That keeps coming
that's
up.
That's the one,
well.
Right?
I love this kind of stuff because I feel like I get extra promotion because every time he fights, regardless of where I'm fighting, my name starts popping up like everywhere as well. Again, they had a really good fight, Anderson Silva and him. They had a really good fight.
Did you watch it?
Oh, yeah. I had to watch it the next day. But
that was like some video game stuff, right?
Yeah,
like,
I feel like you,
of all people, would appreciate that.
Oh, 100%. I think they're both amazing.
The flashiness was phenomenal.
Yeah, I love it. I feel like it wasn't long enough. Like, I wanted another two rounds.
More rounds,
yeah,
right?
I wanted another two rounds. It was good. Like, and you can see the respect that they had for each other at the same time. But they didn't change themselves. They were still, like, Anderson Silva was still himself. I was worried as I was because I feel like he's not the same Anderson Silva. I don't think he has the same chin.
Right.
So he shouldn't necessarily make the same or take the same risk, but it was amazing. It was amazing to watch.
And so is that something where, like, you see Israel and you say, that would be fun? This is the kind of opponent that I'd like to fight?
Yeah. Again, I've never, like, this is the first time. And again, you know, I've been on the show multiple times and, you know, I've spoken to you multiple times. This is probably the first time that I've called anybody out, and that's because it was personal. Mm. So I find it weird to call anybody out.
Sure, sure.
Again, any fight, if you're just talking fantasy fights, it'd be great to see what would happen.
Yeah.
You know, even Anderson Silva, I'd like to just spar with him. You know what I mean?
Sure.
Just to experience it. But I don't chase fights.
No, but is there a part of you that sits back and watches and be like, that would be a fun challenge?
Yeah, no, 100%. Like, but that seriously, it's not just people that have similar styles.
Gotcha.
There's multiple people that I'm like, oh, that'd be good to watch. And that'd be nice. I'd like to see if my style, you know, fits with that. And this, yeah, like, it's multiple people but that's just as I'm watching it.
Right. I feel like you can sympathize with him because every time he fights, it's like, you're overrated. You get easy.
100%.
Same thing that you get, right? All the time.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a weird thing. I think it's something that the flashy fighters get a lot because you guys make it look so easy. You make it look so effortless that people think it's easy, but it's not.
And I've actually had this conversation like multiple times, but I was talking about it the other day, and I was like, if I had the exact same run of fighters and I was a bit more of a brawler and I, you know, I came out a bit bumped and bruised, but I won every single fight, I would have a lot more people on my side, but a lot less people watching me.
Right.
So it's a weird thing because I would just be another MMA fighter that, you know, he's winning fights, so congratulations, but not, that wouldn't spark that emotional response of hate or love.
Right, of course.
And I think that is what makes, you know, our type of fighting styles such a, makes us blow up so quickly, just because it's a constant talking point. No, that shouldn't be right. That's not this. Or he's not fighting people good enough. A lot of the guys that I've fought, they've gone on to UFC or they were in UFC beforehand. They're established fighters. And again, I hadn't been in the game long. I could only fight what's in front of me and what's offered to me.
I love personally when you do all the stuff in there. Like, I love that stuff. Please don't stop doing it.
But never.
Okay. But I was going to ask, like, as the opponents get tougher, do you foresee yourself scaling back, like against Paul? Should we expect the same type of stuff?
100 million.
Maybe even more so.
Maybe a little bit more so.
Okay.
Maybe a little bit more so. But again, people don't understand how. Again, from the outside looking in, you always like, well, I would have done this, and why don't you just throw that punch, and why don't you just kick his leg? It's right there. But when you're experiencing it and it's in front of you, it's very, very different, and the frustration that comes into fighting a style like mine is real. It's a serious frustration. And a lot of the times I find the more experienced fighters get the most frustrated the quickest. They get their way earlier than everybody else because they're used to getting away with what they get away with as being good fighters. So they ended up just letting go of everything that they've worked on a lot quicker than, you know, the more, say, lower level fighters, if you want to call it that, or just more inexperienced fighters. And, my style works across the board against everybody. And 100%, there's going to be times where, people are going to, you know, people will stay composed and blah, blah, blah. But my style, aside of the frustration, is still effective. Hmm. So it doesn't take anything away from it. I'm not just going on hoping everybody has a tantrum during the fight. The style works. The movement, the understanding of range, the pinpoint accuracy, how I can land and get out safely. All of that stuff is just perfect and works well with MMA. So, yeah.
And what about the boxing stuff? Because you took a bit of a break there. You were working with David Haye, correct?
Yeah.
Bellator on board with this. They gave you 100%. The okay.
And this is another reason why I love being in there, because they're open to things like that. You know, you see some of their guys on Risen.
Yep.
They're about that kind of collaboration and just incorporating it. I don't think it takes away from the show, and they understand it doesn't take away from the show. It adds value to them.
Mm.
If we go out over there and we're beating people up over there, it just means more people are talking.
Sure.
And then when I get back here, all those people are now wanting to tune in as well.
Yep.
For me, it just makes sense. So, yeah, with the boxing at the moment, you know, honestly, when something this big kind of is presented to you, you want to focus on, this garden and the fruits that I can bear in this garden,
right.
And not really take it anywhere else at the moment. There's it's quite a difficult organization to navigate through. There's a lot of politics in it as well. But aside of that, I just want to focus on this tournament because it's going to mean so much.
Okay, but you will go back to boxing.
100%, yeah.
But no more kickboxing. Are you done with kickboxing?
I'm done with kickboxing. I just kind of want the new challenges.
Okay.
I'm more interested in 100% in the mixed martial arts, and then just seeing where I can go with the boxing.
Do you have a deal with David Haye?
It's all individual.
It's all individual
basis, because he enjoys me being a part of the team, the camp and stuff, and then he enjoys being able to promote a unique style like myself. So, but understands I have other commitments and stuff.
Right.
So he's easy.
If the stakes were the same, the money was the same, everything was the same, which do you actually prefer doing more, MMA or boxing?
It'd be MMA.
Okay,
100%. I get to do more. I get to show more of my attributes in MMA. There's kicks that people haven't seen me do yet, and again, I wouldn't be able to get away with so much in the boxing. So, yeah, definitely the MMA.
Now is the $1 million thing that 50 Cent put up, is that legit? Are you guys really winning $1 million?
No, 100%.
It is.
Yeah. Or it's either that, or me and 50 are fighting off.
so not only do you win the title, of course, because Rory's a part of it, but you win $1 million.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. So it's again for me the finance is just a cherry on the top. Like I genuinely just enjoy fighting and enjoy being able to display to more and more people. And I'm more excited about, in terms of 50 Cent, I'm more excited that he just brings more other eyes to the table. That just means more people are going to get to watch me and do what I do best. And I love being on the show. I love the spotlight. I love kind of putting on a show. I'm an entertainer. So that means more to me. The $1 million is 100% is nice. And it just means I can continue just focusing solely on what I'm best at doing and just be better at that.
So right now, Douglas Lima advanced.
Mm-hmm.
Rory's going to fight John Fitch.
Yep.
Neiman Gracie advanced.
Yep.
He beat Ed Ruth.
Yep.
So it would be Gracie versus the winner of Rory and Fitch, and you're going to fight, or Paul's going to fight the winner of...
Yeah. No, you said it right the first
time. Yeah. not the winner, Douglas Lima, who's standing by.
Yeah.
I know you're confident. Who do you expect to see on the other side? In the final,
the obvious is, you know, going with the person that's got the belt.
Yeah,
currently.
Is that who you want? Like, do you want to beat the champion?
Yes. Now, the only reason I say that is because I can already hear what would happen. He had lost the belt,
right?
Let's say Fitch goes through, and you know he beats Gracie, or Gracie goes through, and I meet one of them.
Yeah.
And I beat them, people will be like, yeah, but you didn't beat Rory.
Right.
Yeah, but you know, but it's Rory that, you know, Rory's the main guy. So I can already hear that. Regardless, it doesn't matter that he lost the belt on the way up. They'll just be like, well, you didn't fight him, you didn't face him, so you still can't class yourself as
the best. Right.
So I can already hear that. So just from that alone, I would prefer that to happen. me beat Rory, and then that just be the end of that. But yeah, it's always going to happen. There's always going to be somebody else that I'm going to have to prove myself to be legit.
Right.
Even after this tournament all goes to plan, I'm the champion, and people are going to be like, yeah, well, you know, you should be doing this. Or right. When are you going to the UFC?
Yeah. Didn't beat Tyron Woodley.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. Can we get a preview of Saturday? How do you see it unfolding in your mind? Have you played this out?
Yeah, it always starts like this.
Yes. And then, oh, he's going to love that when you guys do.
In all honesty, I want to, similar to Caveman, I feel like I really well and truly got into his mind during that fight.
Oh, yes.
I really and truly frustrated him. And the same kind of thing, I don't necessarily believe he's going to give up, but I do believe during that fight, he's going to realize just the difference between us, the different caliber that I bring to the cage. He genuinely believes that he's on another level. And again, anybody with that kind of power would be confident in themselves, and I understand that. But I just need him to understand after this fight. I don't want it to be a close fight. I need it to be obvious that, same way I deal with my other fighters, it's obvious that I am on another level, and then people can be like, okay, this is it's interesting, because, you know, I would have classed Paula as the bigger one.
Mm.
And I've dealt with him the exact same way. So it will say more and more about my style and how legit that style is.
Right. That David Rickles fight was something else. It reminded me a lot of Anderson versus Forrest Griffin. I don't know if you ever saw that.
Of course, yeah.
I mean, to mentally break someone like that, that must be the best feeling, right? Because not only did you break him physically, but clearly you broke him mentally. He just wanted nothing to do with you anymore.
Yeah.
What a feeling that must be.
It was amazing. At the time, it was weird. I wasn't happy about it because I...
Really?
Not really. I kind of wanted the finish.
Okay.
At the time.
You felt it was anticlimactic?
Well, I don't know. I just in the moment, I was still fired
more.
Up, man. I had more to give. So it was a bit annoying. But then it's when you think about it, he himself is an amazing athlete. He's so tough. And that's one of the things that I would have been like, okay, number one on this guy is I can hit him with a lot of stuff. And I think I said it in multiple interviews. This guy's going to keep getting back up. Getting back up. That's one thing. So my aim is not to finish him. It's just to keep putting, like, just keep damaging him. Keep damaging him. Stay safe. Keep damaging him. So for him to pull out, I was like, wow, like, actually, that does work. You know what I mean? Like, it is quite an epic to do it to somebody of his caliber, who's known for being the tough guy. He's known for having some crazy back and forward fights and still being in the fight at the end. I was definitely happy with that.
Last thing, do you have things in store for Paul Daly this week? Are you gonna?
Oh yeah,
really?
Oh yeah,
you got,
man,
some tricks for him.
I just gotta keep poking. That's just me.
Yes,
I just gotta keep poking. And again, the end of the day, it's the fight that's gonna mean the most. This is all. This for me, it's just fun. I'm enjoying the journey of it.
Right.
And I really like winding him up. I don't know what it is. He's just got that face.
Michael, my man, thank you so much. I can't wait for the fight. I was worried we were never going to get to see it.
Yeah, we spoke about it.
Yes, I was very legitimately worried about this.
I was.
And initially I was upset it was not happening in the UK, but now I'm over all of that. I'm just happy it's happening.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah.
Huge fight for Bellator, the biggest grudge match in the history of UK MMA. And I would argue the biggest grudge match in the history of Bellator as well. This Saturday, Bellator 216. At the Mohegan Sun in Uncasville, Connecticut. It's Paul Daly versus Michael Venom Page. And there's the main card right over there. Czech Congo against Vitaly Minnikov, returning, the heavyweight champion, returning finally after all these years. Also the legend Mirko Krokop against Roy Nelson. We're getting to see that rematch. Eric Silva is going to be returning as well. And Valerie Lureda making her debut. Michael Page, my man, thank you so much. Best of luck to you. My hands are a little sweaty, so I'm going to give you the pound. I don't want to infect you with my sweat. What a pleasure. What an honor to have you in studio. All the best to you. There he is, Michael Venom Page. He faces Paul Daly on Saturday at the Mohegan Sun in Uncasville, Connecticut. And in a matter of seconds, Paul Daly is going to be joining us in studio. Here's a quick refresher on the man they call Semtex.
Introducing Paul Semtex Daly.
Paul Daly is a knockout artist.
All I know is Michael Page is a...
And so there you have it. Bellator 216, MVP versus Daly, Mohegan Sun, Uncasville, Connecticut. Again, pretty stacked one. And there's a card on Friday as well that is headlined by Matt Mitrione versus Sergey Kharitonov. There he is, Paul Semtex Daly. 40-16-2. Look at that pro record. Former Cage Rage welterweight champion. He has fought in the UFC. He has fought all over the place. He is somewhere here. He's about to enter the studio in a matter of seconds. Hopefully they don't cross paths. Hopefully there's security there and there's eyes on both of those individuals. Busy weekend coming up in the world of mixed martial arts. Like I said, Bellator on Friday, Bellator on Saturday, Mitrione versus Sergey Kharitonov, Logan Storley fighting on that card, friend of the program, Mike Kimball on the card as well, and Mr. Van Zandt himself, Austin Vanderford, also making his Bellator debut. That's Friday. So the Friday card is on Paramount and DAZN. The Saturday card is exclusively on DAZN. And you don't have to worry about choosing between the Bellator card on Saturday and the UFC card because the UFC card is on Sunday. There's also LFA this weekend. Invicta's returning. Pearl Gonzalez fighting for their vacant flyweight title. Cage Warriors 101, one championship. A very busy week. CFFC, UFC, as I said. Everyone's in action. Pretty much like every major promotion has an event this weekend. Except for PFL, who's on hiatus, at least for now. All right, in a matter of seconds, I think I see some feet over there. What an honor to be joined by the legend, Paul Daly. He's going to come in studio. He's never joined us in studio before. This is a big deal. Semtex. I can't wait for this fight. And yeah, I'll admit, I was a little bummed initially when I found out Uncasville. What? Biggest grudge match in UK MMA history? It's happening in Connecticut? This makes no sense. But now I'm over it. Now I just want to see the fight because I honestly, legitimately thought that it would never happen, that it would never come to fruition. Let's say hello to the man himself sitting as we speak. Wow, what an honor.
How are you?
MMA royalty.
Oh, I don't want to fall off this chair.
No, you're good. I don't want you to get injured either. You good? You know, you can make it a little lower. There's a lever right over there. You see this thing?
Right there, that black thing.
Okay,
we're good. Is it working? And then you kind of push down? No? You know,
this will do.
This is fine. Yeah, you just come closer to the microphone. You comfortable, Paul?
I'm okay.
You're okay. Can we help Paul's chair here? I don't know what's going on. Oh, there we go. It's this one on the side. You see that? On the other side, on the right side. Oh, there it is. How's that feel?
Yeah, it's better.
Okay, good. Paul, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
It's good to have you here. Smiling. Have you ever been to ESPN before?
Never.
This is the worldwide leader in sports, Paul. It's a big deal.
Big news. That's why I put it on my Instagram.
Oh, you did?
At Semtex170, yeah.
Look at you now. You're like a social media king. Instagram, Twitter, for years you were ignoring it. You were just a Facebook guy for years.
Yes, I was.
Now you're Instagram and Twitter. Yeah. But more Instagram than Twitter, right?
More Instagram, yeah.
Why is that?
I take care of my Instagram. I don't know. It's a little more interesting, I guess.
Okay. You like the visual, the photos, the videos, things like that.
Interesting.
Well, I'm happy that you're here. Thank you for doing this.
No problem.
And as I was just saying, I legitimately thought for a long time this fight would never happen. I was worried. It was taking a while. First, let me ask you, same question I asked him. Did you guys see each other back there, by the way?
No.
Okay, good. Have you seen each other while you're here?
No.
No issues?
No issues.
Okay, good.
No
issues. We made a point to try to keep you guys separate. What was your reaction when you found out this fight wasn't happening in the UK?
It's a hard one. It was a surprise, I'll say that. But at the same time, I'm comfortable fighting in the US, you know?
Yeah.
I've done it for a long time. I was a bit disappointed that, you know, the UK MMA fans, my family and friends would miss out on seeing the fight live. But for me, it was just like, wherever it happens, it's all good.
Yeah. Because this would be a big deal back home. It is a big deal, but just it would just like feel like one of those, you know, Anthony Joshua fights, I feel like, or David Haye back in the day, Ricky Hatton.
But really, I feel like it's already in that same kind of vein, you know. I said Chris Eubank, Nigel Benn.
Yes, yes.
You know, whether it's here in the US or the UK, I still feel like the fight in itself is interesting enough that the UK MMA media and the fans and everybody's got behind the fight anyway.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we've got a good TV deal now, so at least people who really want to stay up and watch the fight can stay up and watch the fight live.
They're telling me to lower my chair. So in case you're wondering why I'm doing this in my ear, they're telling me, I think they didn't want me to be that much taller than you.
Okay.
So out of respect to the King Semtex, I'm going to do that. Yes, the Sky Sports deal. That's a huge deal.
Yeah,
and now it's finally live.
Yeah.
Bellator's finally live in the UK.
Yeah, that's huge. You know, Sky is the go-to place for all your sports in the UK. Yeah, it's fantastic. You know, it's real big news.
So I was talking to Michael just earlier and asking him in his mind, like, how this all started, the issue between you two. Can I hear your side of the story? How did this whole thing started?
This is basically it. You know, it's a bit of a nothing story for me. You know, we're working at the same promotion, colleagues as such, never friends, never really calling each other on the weekend. But if we do some press together, you know, or we sat Kate together, we'll have a drink, we'll have a laugh. We were like friendly colleagues,
okay,
but not friends. You know, I fought Brendan Ward, adrenaline's pumped, great knockout. Someone asked me, you know, what do you think of Michael Page? And casually I said, he's a great fighter, but he's Adrian Broner and I'm Floyd Mayweather. And that was it. It was just a comment. Now, Michael took that to heart and it was, given it some thought, it must have sort of hit a nerve with him somewhere. There must have been something there already. Maybe he felt like, you know, I don't know. Maybe there was something there already. And that kind of opened the wound up even greater. And then before I know it, he wants to fight me and he's calling me out and there's this and it's that. So the emotional side of it, he calls me emotional and he calls me erratic, but it's come from him. Like for me, I'm like, you know, it's cool. You know, I had that thing after the Rory fight where I was told he was coming for me behind my back. So I had that little bit there. But for me, you know, if you look at it all, I'm pretty cool with the fact of fighting him. It was just a matter of timing and the opportunity. So, yeah.
So you heard after the Roy fight that he was literally coming behind you?
Yeah, yeah. But he kind of blows the story off. He says that there's – I'm so over the whole thing that
okay. –
He kind of looks into it a little bit more than I do, but the fact of the matter is there was one exit which I was ushered towards.
Yeah, we're looking at the scene right over here.
Yeah, there was there one exit I was ushered towards. I went to the right as told, and then he went around the cage and came behind me. Someone says, hey, look, you know, he's come behind you. So I turn around and say, what's up?
Okay.
Yeah.
And so he says that, like, for the cameras, you put on this front, but then when you're behind the scenes, there's nothing. Nothing's being said. You're kind of nice to him, but when it's, you know, like when the red light is on.
But what have I done or said on camera that is kind of would instigate anything? You know, he can say I act away in front of a camera, behind the camera, but if you look back, I've never said anything bar the making the fight official, which that whole after the Rory thing was, you know, I'm an intelligent guy. I've been in the sport for a while. I know the fans wanted the fight. I wanted the fight. I knew kind of where Bellator was going. So, you know, to make the fight a little more interesting, of course, I'm going to call him a pussy. I'm going to try and get the fans behind it, make it interesting, make the news media pick up on it, the MMA media. So that was an intelligent move on my part. But after that, if you look at all the interviews and look at all the pieces I've done, there's been very little in the way of, you know, childish name calling, memes and gifs, do you call them that? Mm. You know, like there has been on Michael Page's part. So for him to say I'm away in front of the camera and different behind is, you know, he's a talented fighter, he's a good guy. We're going to fight now.
How do you feel about the fact that, you know, he calls you Paula and he puts out the props?
No, I think when all that started, I just thought it was childish. I didn't really know his age until, you know, I was watching a fight and it brought it up. I thought it was like, I kind of, you know, let him off of it a bit because I thought it was like 25, 26, you know, everyone's saying this new young guy coming up. He's 32 years old. Mm. I mean, it's the kind of humor. You know, I did the whole Koscheck thing back when I was with the UFC. I was 26 then. Yeah, okay, I was excited. I'm in the UFC. He's a grown man doing this kind of stuff. I know he is. He's the new age fighter as such on the MMA scene as far as he's very aware of the power of his social media, hence his followers and hence all the other stuff that he does. But for me, I just thought he was being childish, to be honest with you.
Do you feel like he's crossed the line?
Not really.
No.
Not really.
At any point?
There was a comment that was made at a recent press conference. I don't know in which in which kind of Tony meant it, but
what do you say?
I can't even remember it. In all was honest, this I can't
the one that just happened?
The one that just happened,
Because, you know, it's funny. He said something, and then you said, I've been respectful. I haven't talked about, but I went back and tried to hear what he said, but I couldn't because I think Scott was talking at the same time.
Yeah.
So I couldn't make out what he said. And then you said that I really wanted to know what he said.
Yeah. To be honest with you, I thought he said what he said. Then someone said he didn't say it. But then
what did you
another news media, someone's actually heard what he said, however.
Okay.
But it's something about, I don't know. I just.
You don't want to repeat it.
Not that I don't want to repeat it. It's just something that I think was. No, it wasn't even serious. He said something like, "It's like what the f-? I don't even know what he said.
Okay.
I don't know what he said."
Now, what did you mean when you said like I've been respectful here?
And exactly that. I've been respectful.
And you said something to him like I could be bringing up stuff, but I'm not. And he said, "Go ahead, bring it up." But
I'm
didn't.
Respectful. I would even right now. I'd just. Brush over the comment and everything.
Okay.
I've been respectful, from the very beginning.
You don't want to go there.
And it's unnecessary. We're going to fight now, and, you know, it's unnecessary.
Why did it take so long for this fight to get made?
Like I say, matter of timing, I think. I just felt like there was things that I wanted to do in Bellator and you know, namely a clear path towards a title. I've had those opportunities and, you know, it didn't go my way. You know, the Doug Sleeman fight and the Rory fight. So Bellator then said that, you know, you have this fight and we're going to package it in this tournament. So it was a no brainer really. And I was aware that it was coming up anyway.
Okay. I was worried after the Fitch fight that maybe the momentum was lost. You know what I mean?
Not really, because it was like the way they packaged it as a grudge match.
People always
want to see a grudge
match.
They want to see a score settled. If they feel like two people genuinely dislike each other, they want to see them fight. And luckily, February 16th, we're going to fight.
Now, I don't know what's the bigger grudge match, you versus Michael or you versus Bellator. Is everything good?
Yeah, we're good now? Yeah, we're good.
How did we clear this up? It got heated there for a second, I must say. I mean, didn't you say yourself you would never fight for them again?
Not never. I just asked for my release. You know, I like to fight.
Yeah.
I like to fight. They wasn't allowing me to fight as often as I was promised.
Was that the problem?
That was the problem. And the only reason why I went to social media is because but we're cool now, but the only reason is because whoever I was talking to, obviously it's a phone, you're going back and forth, and iMessage says, okay, you're released. So I said, okay, I'm released.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
You were actually told you were released?
Yeah, I was told, okay.
Really?
Cool. I asked my release, says, no problem, you've got it.
Wow.
I said, but obviously, they thought, yeah, they thought against it. So
how did it get fixed?
I guess it was a little bit on both part. We both had to sort of talk for one, and I think a lot of what I said got the desired effect because I hadn't sat down with Scott Coker. I've had the one meeting now, and talked about things, but I'd never sat down with him, and I'd seen him numerous times. I fought for him at Strikeforce and now I'm fighting for him at Bellator. And I never really spoke to him apart from press conferences. So I wanted the opportunity for him to give me that sort of respect. You know, he puts me in these big fights. He obviously knows that I can deliver in these big fights. But then I kind of felt like he wasn't giving me the respect, not as an employee, but as a man, to sort of talk to me and say, right, okay, Paul, whether it's good or bad, just say what he has to say. And, you know, since then we've done that. We've sat down, we've talked. I understand where he's going. I understand his vision for me and everything. And we're all good.
So you had the extended sit down with him?
Yep. Sat down with him.
And it was good?
Yeah, it was good. It was very positive.
Scott's a pretty nice, mellow guy, right?
He is. And I think he was taken back by the fact that I was like, of the way I was. And even meeting him in person, you know, I just kept it going, you know. I wasn't happy, and there were situations where I shown that I wasn't happy, not in a horrible way, but sort of in a I don't see you way.
And then you had to call upon the crazy Egyptian Ali to help you out as well.
That was kind of random.
You have no connection to him, right?
No connection whatsoever. He must have seen something in me that sort of connected with himself at the time. And yeah, he just gave me a phone call. He's like, you know what? I want to help you out. I want to manage you. And I looked at the roster, and it was like, yeah, I've been self-managed for a long time now, and I probably still don't, but the timing was right for him to sort of step in and me to step back and allow him to yeah. negotiate a deal. And it was just
good. Sometimes it's good to have someone like on the front lines battling for you, right? Because maybe it's a little emotional for you. You can just not sit back.
But I feel like sometimes that when things need to be said, they need to be said, and they need to be said with the emotion and the intention of how, you know, that I want him delivered correctly. And I feel like when you have a manager, because he's looking out for himself and looking out for his own percentage and sure. trying to keep me in check as such and tick all the right boxes, that sometimes that message isn't delivered properly. So I actually prefer to be able to sit down with someone and say, look, I don't like what you're doing. What are you doing? Where am I going? You know, what can you talk to him face to face? And then no one can pass the blame and everything's meant as it's meant.
So are you still with Ali?
I am, yeah. Okay, yeah, yeah. Okay, I'm still working with him. He's going to fly out Thursday.
Okay.
Yeah, so it's all good.
It's all good.
It's all good.
Would you classify this fight as, like, is it personal for you?
Not really.
It's not.
It's not personal. And I know that Michael needs for me to, he needs to try and make it personal.
Yeah. He thinks he's in your head. Yeah. And you're shook. That's what he thinks.
He's not in my head at all. The fight was made and I knew that was one of the things that he'd be trying to do as such. And it's just, you know, the fights that I've had in the past when I've shown emotions, I've learned from them, all of them, and some have worked out well. I needed that emotion to get through the fight, and some of them have not worked out well. And I think this is the fight that I need to approach in without emotion and just enjoy it. I know I'm better than him. I know I'm going to knock him out. And I think all he's doing is just highlighting his own insecurities. So.
Wow. So I was going to ask you in the follow-up question, like, are you worried about maybe fighting, you know, sometimes when you fight a fight that's like very personal, it's very emotional, you don't really think out there, you're doing things that you're not, you know, that you didn't prepare for the game, you stray from the game.
I'm prepared.
This is not going to happen with you.
No, I'm prepared. I'm composed and I'm extremely confident. I feel like it's almost like with his social media presence and the one, maybe two spectacular finishes that he's had has sort of put up this illusion to everybody that he's some kind of the supreme fighter who's going to take over the sport. I don't see like that. I watch my fights. I watch my good and bad performances and stylistic matchups as well. For me, this is a no-brainer that he's going to get knocked out. Like, stylistically, I just don't see how he can beat me. I just don't.
So maybe it's not personal, but perhaps you've never been more motivated for a fight because of everything that's been said?
Not necessarily motivation, but I kind of feel like, yeah, I do obviously have motivation to fight, but I feel like I just have to make people see what I see and perform as I can perform and highlight what he doesn't do and
what does he not do?
Dispel the illusion. Just dispel the illusion. I just want to clear the air.
Okay.
That's it.
Because I feel like in some fights, you've been frustrated with the matchup.
Very much so.
And maybe sometimes that kind of kills your motivation. Like, I don't really get up for this fight. But like this has everything that you want, right? It's another striker.
Yep.
There's some sort of issue there. It's a matchup. All eyes are on you. Like, this ticks all those boxes for you, right? That you've been looking for.
For me, it's an ideal matchup.
Yeah.
You know, people don't see what I see. A lot of people think I'm going to lose because it's so spectacular and all of this. And he does this good. But I like to place myself mentally in a position that I'm in now. I feel like I have to show everybody, like, certain styles, certain fights, I cannot lose. And this is one of those fights.
You feel like he's overhyped, overrated?
He's very good. Very good. He's had some, like I say, one or two spectacular finishes. He's a good fighter. He is a really good fighter, but he just can't beat me. Hmm. That's it.
Have you known of him for a while? Like, did you hear about him a long time ago from the, you know, the UK scene?
Not really.
Really?
Not really. It was at Bellator that I really became aware of him. Obviously doing all the press and stuff together, sharing a changing room with him, doing the Battle of Britain show that we did. Like I say, we spent some time together on PR shoots and stuff, but I've where I was in the sport at the same time, as I said in the press conference, he was in leisure centers fighting on square mats. So he was never on my radar. Mm. Our goals were completely different at the time. Mm. So no.
How do you feel about the size difference? Cause I feel like for you to the body, like this is like one big target, that long frame.
Yeah, but look, I am the first to admit I'm not a big 170-pound fighter,
yeah.
But I've had over, what, I don't know, 60 MMA fights. I've always been this weight class. I've always fought bigger guys. Even over to my kickboxing matches, always fought bigger guys with a longer reach and taller guys. I'm used to it.
Okay.
I'm used to it. And you have that. Some fighters are just made for a division. Like Mike Tyson, he was a small heavyweight, right?
Right, right.
He was pretty successful.
Yes.
You know what I mean? So it's just, it is what it is. Height and range, he has to utilize it. I have to sort of do what I do without giving too much away and just perform how I know I can perform. And that is that.
I've heard you say this a couple times in the interview now. Like, do you feel like people are starting to count out Semtex? Like they've forgotten?
No.
Do you have to remind people?
No, I don't feel like I have to remind people. I just feel like people are just missing the point. They're missing something.
What is the point? Not that
I have to remind them. They know I'm still here. They know I'm still here. I've been here for a very long time, but I just feel like they're kind of missing the point.
What is the point that you want to prove? What's the point?
I just want to dispel the illusion. It's not a matter of me having something to prove. It's a matter of me kind of just knocking him out, basically. Just really putting an end to the illusion.
Okay. Are you loving the game as much as you did?
Always. I'm very passionate about mixed martial arts. You know, back home I run a school, Spirit Dojo Legacy, and I enjoy teaching, I enjoy coaching, I enjoy the journey as a martial artist, and people don't think of me as that because maybe sometimes I don't portray myself, or people get the wrong impression from reading words rather than hearing me speak and hearing me deliver things as they're supposed to be said. I come from a background in traditional martial arts. I see this as a never-ending journey. And I'm in mixed martial arts for a long time now.
Is there any part of you that is worried? Like he mentioned to me, like your claim to fame, like the number one thing that people always talk about with you is the Nick Diaz fight.
I think the number one thing that people talk about is the fact that I consistently knock people out. Diaz was a great fight because Diaz is a huge name, and it was a fantastic one round brawl, which is what it was. But, you know, there's lots more things that I've done in my career, that people, I'm going to use your thing and say, forget. They forget. They forget that I came into the UFC and knocked out Martin Kampman, who was the number one contender at the time. And I was coming up from Cage Rage or whoever I was fighting for at the time. They forget certain things, but people who know.
Yeah.
You know, and I had that someone on my social media posted something similar to that. If you know, and if you really look at the fights that I've had, and you think about this matchup with clear eyes, this guy cannot beat me. What is he going to do? What does he present that I have not faced already? Taller opponent. My whole career, I fought taller opponents. Is he a killer one-punch knockout artist like the beast that I faced in Douglas Lima for 3 rounds? No, he's not. Is he an elite wrestler like the wrestler I faced? Not necessarily beat, but I faced the elite wrestlers. Is he going to bring to me a takedown that I've never seen before? Is he going to push and maul me against the cage? He's not. He's going to have to stand in that cage with me until he gets knocked out or for 25 minutes and take a beating and realize not to believe your own hype, basically.
What is your favorite Paul Daly fight?
I have
quintessential Paul Daly.
I have many. I have many fantastic performances. There's not one that I can highlight. There's knockouts that I like. One of my favorite knockouts is probably Scott Smith, but not because of the knockout itself, but because of the fact that he'd just knocked out Kung Lee, who was at the time Strikeforce middleweight champion or something like that. And he'd come back from being beat up and he'd knock Kung Lee out. And I thought that was
incredible.
That was a good knockout just because of what he'd achieved before. But I've been knocking guys out a long time over my career. And 32 out of 40.
Yeah.
It's not bad.
That feeling when you connect and the guy like is like a tree and just, like there probably isn't a greater feeling in the world for you, right? When you know like you hit that bullseye.
For me, when I hit that shot, it's just it's not necessarily a feeling. It's just, I know. You know when it's game over and I you just know. It's become such a familiar thing to me that I don't really get too hyped about it.
Really?
Apart from Brendan Ward, because that was pretty cool because it was a spinning back fist to a double flying knee. You had to be, and the way the crowd reacted as well at the forum might have pushed me a little over the edge.
But. And that's when this whole thing started, right? When you were on the mic.
Exactly.
So when you look at his opponents, because the knock on him is always like, you haven't fought anyone, they're moving you too slowly, they're giving you easy matchups. When you look at his resume, are you impressed with it or do you feel like it's legit, like he has not fought anyone like you?
I personally don't feel that he's fought anyone like me. And his closest comparison is, I believe, Cyborg. And if that's what he thinks of me, then, you know, he's in for a rude awakening. He hasn't fought anybody like me, and I'm going to show that on February 16th.
We're looking at some of his highlights here, and he loves the antics, right? In the fight, after the fight.
Yeah.
If he starts doing that, and he says he's got a lot planned for you, and it's going to be even more than usual.
Yep.
For you, like a vet, you've seen and done it all. He starts doing the dancing and all that stuff. How will you react to that?
We're going to see on February 16th.
Yeah.
We are going to see.
You're not going
to
get
like
annoyed?
I say, like, no. Why should I? When he throws a punch, he has to throw a punch. He can't dance and do his break dance and his snake and punch at the same time. You know, I am fighting a fighter. I'm not fighting a dancer. So if he wants to dance, he can dance. And then at some point over 25 minutes, he's going to have to fight. And that's what I do best.
Yeah. And that's a good point, by the way, because typically Bellator non-title main events are 3 rounds, but because the champion's involved in this tournament, every fight is a 25-minute fight.
Yeah, that's correct.
Do you feel like that favors you? He hasn't been in a lot of those, if not any.
No, he hasn't. And I'm a fit fighter. I'm fit and I'm in shape. I've trained well for this fight.
I saw on your Instagram.
Yeah.
You appear to be in phenomenal shape.
I'm in great shape. You know, all the coaches have done their job. And I'm prepared, if it needs to go 25 minutes. Mm. No problem.
I also saw, as well. Speaking of your Instagram, it's, what is it, Semtex 170?
Or, at Semtex 170, yep, that's correct.
But then the Twitter is another, is like underscore.
I don't even know the Twitter. That's
that's the one I'm proud of because I feel like I kind of pushed you over
you
the
did
edge.
Push
there
me.
It is, right
you
over there. Semtex
me.
Underscore 170
there
on Twitter.
Go.
There
we
is.
Go.
You'd probably rather they put the Instagram up there.
Yeah, put the Instagram up there.
But I saw that you posted you and the infamous Mike from Mike's Gym.
Yes.
Legendary. And you said it's a humbling experience going there. It's a
always.
What is
always.
That like going there? I mean, this is some of the greatest
always.
Fighters in the world have come through that gym in Holland.
You know, I've been going to Mike's for a very long time, and I go for obviously the training, but also to be humbled. You know, you guys in the sport of mixed martial arts think of me as a knockout artist and then a striker, an elite striker. But when you go there, you sort of find your place within that kind of discipline. And I need that. And I need to be reminded of my flaws. And that's the best place to go and sort of get that eye opener. I was there at the beginning of camp and I closed out my camp there.
Oh, really? Okay.
And it always has a great effect on my performances whenever I've been there.
Last time I spoke to you, you said you were getting ready to go to Jamaica for the first time.
Yes.
You went.
I went.
And you went with your mom,
I went. I took mom to Jamaica.
First time. She's from Jamaica, correct?
She's from She's from London, but she's first generation. Yeah.
Gotcha.
So yeah.
What was it like?
It was fantastic. You know, I got to meet family that I'd never seen before. Got to experience the country basically, and I enjoyed it. And I'm going to try and go. Well, I will be going every year. I think I'm probably going to go in August again.
Okay.
And yeah, keep that going. I kind of connected with the place, you know. Even though I was born and raised in England, I think something remains in your soul, in your blood, that when you go to where your family, your predecessors have come from, it kind of gives you something.
Did you go train there? Do I recall?
No, I was supposed to go and train. I was supposed to go and do a free seminar out
there. Yeah.
For some of the kids of Kingston, but something along the way didn't work out.
Okay.
And,
is MMA popular there?
I do believe so. Yeah, they're doing shows out there. I know
really?
Sterling's been out there and done seminars, as well as Leon Edwards as well have been out there and done some seminars and things. So yeah, I think it's growing, and you know, it would be a nice location to have a fight there.
I gotta say, I mean, you've provided great memories for us, great highlights, but. And I know it wasn't the most positive moment, but you talking smack at the end of the John Fitch fight was just like, I think you were talking to Mauro and those guys, right? Like, what is this? And, are you happy?
Give me the share. I think I messaged you about that and says, yeah, thank you very much. Yeah. And I just felt like, you know what, this is bullshit. And I felt like this, nobody wants to see this, you know, it's something's got to give.
Yeah.
Maybe, I don't know. I'm not against it. I train all mixed martial arts. I train all aspects of the sport. But, you know, if you're going to do something, do it. If you're going to take me down, then take me down, beat me up. If you're going to go for a submission, break my arm, choke me out. Don't, you know, I think there has to be some kind of rule change in terms of activity. And I just felt not just at that point, but it was coming to that point through the whole fight. I thought there was moments where it could have been separated and stood back up on the feet, and that was it at the end. I was like, this is shit. And that's what.
Did you realize they were so close to you?
Yeah, I could see him. I could see him. I was talking to him, and they were looking at me like they didn't know how to respond, or I don't know what they said or what came through on the commentary, but he was like, kind of like thumbs up, you know, kind of thing. Don't spit at me or whatever. But it was just like, you know, give the fans what they want. And
sure.
I got like an Instagram, someone sent me from filming in the crowd, and this is John Fitch's hometown, and, you know, there was a lot of booing, and he said they were booing because I wasn't doing anything, but then the guy's like, Fitch is shit, man, this is boring, what the f-? So it's like, yeah, I think they were booing you, John, but it was, it is what it is, fight's gone, I'm looking forward now.
Okay, so Lima is next, right? He won already his first round match.
Yep.
On the other side, it is Fitch versus Roy McDonald and Neiman Gracie.
Roy takes that comfortably.
Yeah, you think Roy takes that, you said? You fought both those guys.
Yeah, I think...
Even though he got beat up pretty bad by Gegard.
I think his mind wasn't in the game, and I think if you watch the fight, you can almost see it. It was kind of... Something was missing.
Right.
I could see that even before he did the post-fight interview. You could, you know, I don't know, fighter's intuition, but I kind of got the sense that something was missing mentally for him in that fight. But, you know, Rory I rate very highly as one of the top guys. You know, I've been in there with him. I've experienced it. I didn't do well. Mentally, I wasn't well because I'm a massive admirer of him and I know what he's capable of. But it was a good experience for me. But I think Rory takes that fight quite comfortably.
Okay, do you think and do you think he beats Neiman Gracie?
I think Rory's in the final.
Yeah.
I think Rory's in the final. I think a rematch with me and Douglas Lima is very interesting. I feel like I made mistakes in that fight, namely starting too fast and getting dropped in the first 30 seconds and playing catch up. But I feel like looking back, there are changes that I can make, and there's probably changes that Douglas could make that he feels will make the fight easier for him. But I feel like that's going to be a good fight.
And then so then you get the rematch against Rory.
Yeah.
And what a storybook ending that is. You win the belt and the $1 million.
It would be. Rory's a tough guy. You know, it'd be a very, very tough fight. I'd have to train a lot more smarter and intelligently than I did for the first fight.
Why? Well, what did you do wrong the first time?
I don't know.
You didn't take it seriously?
No, I took it extremely seriously, but I just didn't. Sometimes you got to be in there and sometimes you got to be in there. And also prior to the fight, I just felt my mind wasn't right.
Really?
But I admit these things, and I learned.
Yeah, no, we appreciate that.
I admit, and I'd learn.
Right before you walked out?
And I moved right before I walked out.
What happened?
I was just maybe too emotional.
Wow.
Maybe too emotional.
And you just didn't feel like yourself?
No, I felt like myself. I felt like myself. I just felt like I was... I felt like Yeah, I don't even know the feeling, but I was.
Has that emotional. Happened before?
Never.
Really?
Never.
Wow.
I don't know. I was just like, I'm fighting Rory McDonald, you know?
Yeah.
Fighters that I respect a lot. Sometimes I rate him highly without kissing his ass too much.
Sure.
He's one of the few fighters that I would put in a category of people that I perhaps watched prior to the fight and admired. So
okay.
It was maybe one of those occasions.
So are you relishing the opportunity to fight him again, or are you dreading it?
No, I didn't get beat up in the fight. I got choked out.
Right.
But he's a tough guy. There didn't seem like there was many openings there in the short time that I spent in the cage with him. I know there are things that I could have done in preparation better that would have maybe created more openings for myself.
Do you like the fact that there's $1 million on the line? Like, does that do you feel like that motivates you a little more?
It's kind of the money, because I've never been the recipient of such money. It's just a number to me at the moment.
Right.
It doesn't feel real. Like, it doesn't feel real. Like, for me, the tournament begins with Michael Page February 16th and victory there. And I'm looking no further than that. I just have to dispel the illusion, knock this guy out, and then we'll talk again after that.
Will a decision not feel quite right? Like, you have to knock him out for this?
No, I don't have to knock him out. I don't have to knock him out, but I just believe I will. I'm going to bring something, and he's going to feel something that he's never felt before.
I love the Chris Eubank, Nigel Benn comparison, because that is the right one, because that felt like a civil war as well, right?
Yeah,
and that's what
this
feels like.
It did. And that's how I can come for the UK. I know the UK media will, they'll attach themselves to that, and they'll be able to, they'll understand what I mean by the magnitude of this fight.
Whose side were you on for that one? Were you
I've
a Eubank
always
guy?
Been a Eubank fan. My dad was a Nigel Benn fan, so it was a bit of a clash there, but it was a good
Chris fight. Eubank might be my favorite human being on the planet. I can listen to that man speak. I mean, what a voice.
He's cool.
Have you ever heard him recite poems and things?
I've never heard him recite poems, but I've read his autobiography, and you know, during his prime I was a massive follower.
Later tonight, if you're bored, go on YouTube and type in Chris Eubank Invictus. He was on my show and he recited Invictus prior to the Mayweather-McGregor fight. And I swear to God, I thought I had an out-of-body experience. It was so eloquent. The way he delivered it was unbelievable.
Good.
And the way he dresses, right?
He's so
dapper.
He's sharp.
Man.
Very dapper. Very good speaker. And a very interesting story if you ever ask him about his
And now
history,
his son.
His biography. And now he has his son, yeah.
Right.
He's a very deep character.
Well, this has been an honor for me, Paul.
Thank you very
much. Appreciate it very much. Again, February 16th, Mohegan Sun, Uncasville, Connecticut. Paul Daly versus MVP, the biggest grudge match in UK MMA history, the biggest grudge match in Bellator MMA history. Paul, I can't thank you enough,
thank
my
you.
Man. I really appreciate it. Best of luck to you. Thanks for doing this. Thanks for coming. I really appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
The one and only Paul Daly. You can just leave now at this point, Paul. I know you got places to go. Thank you, everyone, for coming. I really appreciate it. Wow, what a pleasure to have the legend Paul Daly and MVP here in studio. What a night. It will be Saturday at Mohegan Sun in Uncasville, Connecticut. And a reminder that February 15th, the night before, also at the same venue, you can see Bellator, Matt Mitrione versus Sergey Kharitonov going down at the Mohegan Sun. Back to back, Bellator. Mohegan has always been very good to Bellator. I'm going to lift my chair now, guys. Is that okay? All right, I'm going to lift it up. Here we go. I think I may have done it a little too much. But how cool was that? Paul Daly and MVP in studio. It's interesting because I got the impression from the Paul Daly interview that it's not as, unless he's just kind of playing it cool, that it's not as personal to him as it is for MVP, even though MVP is the one who's saying that it's personal or more personal for Paul Daly. Did you get that? Do you understand what I'm saying? MVP is saying that for him, for Daly, it's super personal, but then Daly is saying he feels, I mean, they're both kind of saying that it's personal, but they're both deflecting it off of themselves. So that's super interesting to me. And yes, I know I've bellyached about the fact that it's not happening in the UK. And yes, I know I feel, you know, I've said that it's a bit of a blunder, but at this juncture, I'm just happy that it's happening. I really am. I am just happy that we're going to see this fight. I can't wait. And it's a big weekend because, like I said, every other promotion is putting on events, UFC on Sunday, but also NBA All-Star Weekend, my favorite weekend of the year. So this is all very exciting stuff. There's just a lot going on. All right. Still to come on the program, Kelvin Gastelum. We'll talk to him about what happened in Melbourne over the weekend. Very unfortunate news in case you missed it. Just hours before UFC 234, Robert Whittaker, the champion in the middleweight division over in the UFC, forced to pull out, forced to undergo emergency surgery for a collapsed bowel and an internal hernia. 3.5 hour surgery. He's still in the hospital. I was told from a source close to him yesterday that they're hoping that he will get released on Thursday. This is serious stuff. And, you know, I think that Robert Whittaker, aka Bobby Knuckles, has the respect of everyone in the sport. I saw some people saying that, you know, he's weak, that he should get stripped, all this stuff. I mean, I think for now we just need to hope for the best and hope that he makes a speedy recovery and wish him the best, because he's not that guy. He really isn't. He's had horrible luck. I mean, last year with the staph infection and the chicken pox and the hamstring and the broken hand against Yoel Romero, it's crazy to me that he's been champion now for almost 2 years and he hasn't actually had a chance to actually defend the title, because the Romero fight was a non-title fight, you recall. He missed weight. So he hasn't had a chance to actually defend the title once. Horrible luck. Gastelum afterwards walking around with the belt, and I said that I thought that he was playing it up perfectly, only because I feel like he needs to convince the audience and the UFC that he should still be next, that he should still be the number one contender, that he shouldn't be passed up. And yeah, it was a bit of a heel turn, if you will, and I know people get so upset about that. Guys, just acknowledge it, just admit it. The reason, when you get hyped for fights, when you get hyped for this fight, Daily MVP, when you get hyped for Conor versus Khabib, Conor versus Jose Aldo, it's because there is something there. Yeah, of course I love when it's all respectful, when it's just, you know, let the best man win, when it's pure athletic. Yeah, that's nice. But you are lying to yourselves when you say, oh, I don't want this WWE crap. It's not WWE crap, trust me. It's the fight game. The fight game was built on issues. The fight game was built on drama. The fight game was built on theatrics. That's what this is all about. If this wasn't a part of it, it would be boring. Look at the NBA. People love the NBA these days because of all the drama. Where is this guy going to go? What's happening behind? Like, people love drama. Stop denying it. And you could call me WWE guy all you want. You could call me the pro wrestling guy and say, oh, you're ruining the sport, like I'm doing any of this. Like, just because I say it on this show, that's why it's happening, which is complete nonsense. The fights that have issues, where there's a story, where there's conflict, they always sell, no matter what. They sell more. And so why I was saying that Kelvin was playing this perfectly was because if Kelvin would have showed up on Saturday at the event, and by the way, credit him for actually just showing up. He didn't have to show up. He could have been in his room crying. But if he would have just showed up with his hands in his pocket, crocodile tears, crying, puppy dog eyes, whatever you want to say, saying, you know, I had this opportunity stolen from me, people would be like, wah, 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 wah. People would be making fun of him for that. People would be saying he's a baby. But instead, he shows up in his suit. He's got the belt. He says, yeah, I've been given the belt, and so what? I won. In my world, this is a victory. In my world, it's a DQ. He lost via forfeit. I showed up, he didn't show up. He got you talking. He got you feeling something. He got you feeling some kind of way about him. Some of you liked it. Some of you thought it was a little classless. Some of you thought that, he should have waited a little bit. He shouldn't take shots at a guy who's just, you know, undergoing surgery for a freaking collapsed bowel and a freaking internal hernia. You felt something about Kelvin Gastelum, who in the past maybe you haven't felt anything about. That's why it's working. And even when I say subtle heel turn, like I saw John Kavanaugh say, like, maybe, just maybe, he's being himself. Guess what? It's still a heel turn. He's just letting it out. He's just doing him. When in the past, sometimes people feel a little weird about being themselves, about saying, you know, what's truly on their mind, how they truly feel. I want to see that. I want to see you amp it up a little bit. Dial it up to 12. That makes it more fun. That gets us emotionally invested. That's what this whole game is about. Like, if Daly and MVP were just two guys fighting, it would just be a fight. You know it as well as I do, but you're a little more interested in it. And I know I'll get people saying, I would like it because it's a battle of two of the best strikers. Yeah, of course. But there's a thing called a cherry. And when you put the cherry on top of the sundae, it just gets it a little better. It makes it taste a little sweeter. Come on. Stop denying it. Stop ignoring those feelings. Embrace it. Now, that's Saturday. Sunday, it's the return of El Campeón, Cain Velasquez. He hasn't fought in 2.5 years. And what a comeback fight for him. No cupcake there. No easy fight there. He's fighting the former number one contender, the man who just knocked out Curtis Blaydes in a matter of second. My friend and yours, mon ami, le prédateur, Francis Ngannou. Francis, how are you?
I'm good. And you?
I'm doing great. You're in Phoenix right now, right?
Yeah, sure.
How is it?
I mean, it's great, man. You know, Phoenix is similar like Vegas, so it's pretty good.
Okay.
And I like it.
And so when did you get there?
Well, on the 3rd.
Oh. Why have you been there for so long?
I was in Europe, so with 8-hour jet lag, so I have to figure it out.
So did you train for this fight in France?
Yes. You know, I got the fight when I was in Cameroon. Then I just decided to make my training camp in France again.
Okay. And so no Las Vegas for this camp. The whole thing was in France.
Yes.
What was your reaction when you got the offer to fight Cain Velasquez in his return fight? Like, was this a fight that was on your radar?
Yes, of course. I was so excited about it. You know that just after I fought Arlovski 2 years ago, I mentioned Cain Velasquez. Then, you know, he said he was injury, stuff like that. And then I always looking forward for this fight. Then now I finally have it. Before have the Curtis fight, before have the Lewis fight, I was looking for Cain Velasquez, and now I have it. So it's a good thing for me.
I think a lot of people are curious as to which Cain Velasquez we're going to see, because we haven't seen him for so long, 2.5 years. Which Cain Velasquez are you expecting to see on Sunday?
What do I expect to see? I want to see the best Cain Velasquez. And anyway, I prepare myself for the best Cain Velasquez. You know, I don't want to be tricked about all those what some people are saying or whatever. Yes.
And as far as his wrestling is concerned, I would imagine he's going to rely on it because it has been a while since he fought, 2.5 years. How comfortable are you engaging in the wrestling side of things with him?
I'm not going. This fight is not a wrestling fight. It's an MMA fight. So I'm feeling good in all aspects. I get prepared for all that. So I believe that I'm gonna do this.
Have they told you what's at stake in this fight? In other words, you beat Cain Velasquez. What happens?
They haven't. They didn't tell me nothing. But I think, I honestly think, if I beat Cain Velasquez, then it could be the title shot.
Okay, that's what you feel, but they haven't told you that.
No, they haven't. They haven't told me.
Francis, what's the difference between you here today on this Monday before the fight and if I would have spoken to you, you know, on the Monday before the Curtis Blaydes fight? Because, you know, as you said, I think you noted on your Instagram, 2018 was a tough year for you. It ended, you know, as far as your athletic career is concerned, on a high note. But of course, you know, the beginning of the year, the first half of the year, the first three quarters of the year were tough. Do you feel like your confidence is at a different level now because you got back on track, you got the finish against Curtis Blaydes? Are you a different fighter mentally going into this fight than you were the last fight in China?
Definitely. I mean, as I said before the fight against Curtis Blaydes, I wasn't, you know, it was so hard to me. And, you know, then I got a fight and he helped me to regain my confidence, you know. So I'm way more confident about this fight than that one. I feel very good. I don't want to over be confident, but just enough to just be Francis in the fight.
Is this the Francis Ngannou who was coming off like the Overeem fight, or do you think you still have some work to do to get your confidence fully back?
I think it's a different Francis Ngannou who went to Overeem fight. It's a Francis Ngannou now who has learned a lot about fighting business. You know, the Francis Ngannou again Overeem fight was very young and with very low experience. You know, this is a new Francis Ngannou.
Now, how are things? I'm always curious, you know, with all the drama and stuff, how are things with you and your coach? Is everything okay now? Did you guys clear all the air? No more drama, no more misunderstandings. Everything good with you and Felnan?
We put everything on point, and then trying to stay like good. So like now, things is good.
Okay. And so if things continue to be good, is there any chance you'll just move back to France and do all your camps there, as opposed to, you know, the PI and doing what you were doing in Las Vegas?
I can go to France sometime, but
right.
No, move back in France definitely.
I have to say félicitations to you, Francis, because I know that you realized the dream of yours to open up the first full MMA gym in your home country of Cameroon, right? You just did that recently, correct?
Yes, that's true.
Okay. How exciting. Is this like one of the most proudest things that you've ever achieved to open this?
Yes. I mean, I was very excited about that, like to achieve that, because for me, it was something that you know, today I'm not going to use that gym, but it's still like something that I'm doing for myself, to be the one that in my entire life I've been expecting him to come and in the town, in my village, and do something like that who could help me to practicing what was my dream, to get a dream, you know. So I try to be the same guy. Maybe for those kids who is back there today and have some dream, and for some, those one who has given up for their dream, doesn't matter what is it, to help them gain confidence, to get hope, the faith in their self, to believe in their self.
And so where is it? It's in Cameroon, correct?
Yes, in Cameroon, and in the first gym is in Batie, my native village.
Wow.
But we're gonna try to extend it all over the country. That's the goal.
So you're gonna open up multiple. How many do you want to open up?
How many I can? You know, how it depends how the life gives, about the life opportunity. We're gonna open it as much as we can.
The name of the gym is Fondation Francis Ngannou, the Francis Ngannou Foundation, correct? What is that? Is that like, do you have a charity or something?
Yes, because the gym is about, this gym is about like charity. It's for kids, you know, and then the kid there cannot afford to pay a gym. It's not possible. So it's something that's going to be free for kids, you know, and then also we're going to find out in the near future different way to help them for scholarship, for medicine, everything. So that's why I decided to make the gym under the foundation, because the foundation going to operate in different aspects, you know.
Wow.
So
if I'm a kid living there, I don't have to pay to join the gym?
No, you are a worker. You are not a kid. You are not a student. You are not a... you know, it's just, it's free for kid, every kid, student, or kid who has like a professional school and everything. Doesn't matter their age, it's free for them.
When did you decide that this was something that you wanted to do? How did this come to you?
The gym by himself, he took me 3 years, and I don't know exactly when I decided, but it was a long time ago, you know. I think it's just the fact that we didn't have something here. The fact that I needed when I was there, you know. Then I started think about it. Like some, you know, I have my eye my eyes opened about this situation, and then I just said, if ever I can, I will do something.
Is it expensive to open up a gym like that?
Yes, it's expensive, but that's not the thing. I mean, it's very exciting also, you know.
Of course.
Today I can afford myself many things, which is expensive. I'm grateful for that. So, you know, you can also give back something which is expensive because you almost give it for free. There are a lot of Francis Ngannou out there. I mean, a lot of kids who has a dream and just need a help. And if you, since you was there and you know exactly what is it, and then you have been blessed. So I think it's okay. I like it. I mean, I have my personal satisfaction by doing that.
Right.
So,
and that is most important. By the way, I just want to ask before I let you go, your take on the state of the division right now, because as you know, Daniel Cormier is champion. Stipe Miocic is very upset that he's not giving him a title shot. The UFC wants to do Brock Lesnar versus Daniel Cormier, and it seems. How do you feel about all this?
I think Stipe has a right to be upset. I think he deserved a rematch. You know, he's been a UFC champ for 4 times. Then he just lost the belt, so he deserves a rematch. I mean, it's well deserved. Then why they doesn't give him the title, the rematch? I don't know, but he deserves it.
How do you foresee this fight on Sunday going against Kane? How do you envision the end?
How do I vision the end? Like always, you know, knocking out. But I also perceive it as a fight that I'm going to have fun. Like, I wait for this fight for a very long time. It'll be a pleasure to fight Ken, you know. It'll be a very honor for me. And then I just have to have fun with him.
To me, what is most interesting about this fight, Francis, is that, you know, people have talked about your cardio in the past, and Kane is like a machine out there. He's like an Energizer bunny. When he's not fighting in Mexico, he's got great cardio. He's relentless. And I feel like this is an opportunity for you, especially because it's a 5-round fight, main event fight, for you to quiet all of those doubters, for you to tell people that Stipe Miocic fight was an anomaly and that you can go the distance with someone like Kane. Do you view it the same way?
You know, I'm careless about what people said, about what people think. I mean, I've been, I think I used to, think about, care about what people think, and that doesn't help me at all. The thing that I'm going to do, I'm just going to be me, do the best that I can, and be who I am. Somebody might like it, somebody might not like it. That is his problem, you know, but I'm just trying to figure out and then work on my every aspect, and then try and find a way to be in the very good shape, you know.
Merci pour le temps, Francis. Enchanté. I'm looking forward to it.
À dimanche.
Oui, à dimanche. I can't wait. Sunday, best of luck to you, Francis. We're looking forward to it. We're going to be watching Sunday from Phoenix. That's Cain Velasquez country, by the way, Francis. Be careful out there, okay? I know everyone's rooting for Cain in Arizona. He's a former Arizona State Sun Devil. So please be careful out there, Francis Ngannou. So there's the lineup this Sunday, February 17th, early prelims on ESPN+. Fun fight there, Jessica Penne versus Jody Escobel. And then how about the prelims continuing on ESPN, Jimmy Rivera versus Aljamain Sterling. And then the main card starts at 9 p.m. Eastern. It's Francis Ngannou versus Cain Velasquez. And you know what's so interesting? My friend Jedi Goodman posted this online yesterday. The 5,000th fight in UFC history will take place, if all goes well, if all goes according to plan, this Sunday on this card, and it will be the fight between Alex Caceres and Krohn Gracie, who is making his UFC debut. And that is interesting in its own right. But Krohn Gracie, the son of Hickson Gracie, the grandson of the legendary Helio Gracie, will be taking part in the 5,000th fight in UFC history. That's insane. What a coincidence. If you don't know what I'm talking about, look up the history of the Gracie family and who Helio was and Hickson. We don't have time for all of that, but that's an amazing coincidence. I like that factoid very much. Jedi Goodman. Thank you for that. So that's this Sunday in Phoenix. Okay, let's go back to this past weekend in Australia. As we've been talking about all show long, unfortunate turn of events. Robert Whittaker doesn't get to fight. He has to withdraw because of the displaced or the collapsed bowel, I should say, and the internal hernia. And as a result, Kelvin Gastelum doesn't get a chance to realize his dream of fighting for a UFC title and thus becoming a UFC champion. Horrible turn of events for all involved. Very happy that Kelvin is on the program right now, so let's not waste any more time and say hello to Kelvin Gastelum, who joins us on the phone. Kelvin, how are you?
Ariel, thanks for having me on.
It is a pleasure. Thanks for doing this, Kelvin. I know you just landed, so I really appreciate it. What is it like, Kelvin, to go on this journey? You know, you're traveling, you're leaving your home, you've spent months preparing for this fight, you're in Melbourne, you're getting ready, you wake up and you find this news, and now you're back home. And you didn't get that release. You didn't get to do what you set out to do. You don't get to come home with a belt. You don't get to have that moment where the belt is wrapped. Like, when you came back home earlier this morning, was that an empty feeling? How would you describe it?
Well, let me start off by saying congratulations on all the success your show has had, man. It's pretty awesome to see where it's going, where it's heading, where it is.
Thank you. I appreciate
that. And, man, it's cool to see where our sport is heading, too, you know, and whether people want to admit it or not. You play your small role in this part, in this movement, you know? So, awesome stuff, man. Congratulations.
That really means a lot to me. Thank you, Kelvin. I appreciate that. Now back to what I was curious about. What was it like when you got home this weekend? Was it an empty feeling, or how would you describe it?
Absolutely, man. I mean, I feel lost right now. You know, I come home. I didn't even get to fight. I didn't get to compete. I have all this built-up energy that I didn't get to use, and it's an empty feeling, that's for sure. It's a lost feeling. I don't know where to go from here. But I'm doing okay. You know, I'm dealing with it the best that I can. I'm dealing with the deck that I was dealt with. I've got the belt here at home, sitting in my living room. It's not the way that I wanted to win the belt, but here it is, dealing with it the best that I can. And let me also say that I was not in any way disregarding Rob's health issue and what he had to go through. I'm sure it's not easy. And, you know, I wish him all the best. I wish him a speedy recovery. By no way, any means was I disregarding him and the surgical procedure that he had to go through. And like I said, I wish him a speedy recovery. Saying that, I this is the second or third time he's had to pull out of the fight against me. We had to, you know, film The Ultimate Fighter, wait that, you know, go through that process, and then have to wait for him to heal up from his hand. And now this happens. And man, it's just devastating. You know what I mean? I haven't fought in more than 10 months. And this is the second time that I've had to wait on Rob. And it's just devastating, man, for this dream of mine to be, you know, at my fingertips and not be able to fulfill it.
When did you find out that the fight was off?
I found out the morning of. It was 7 a.m. They were knocking at my door, and it was the UFC staff along with my coach, and you know, they broke the news to me, and man, I started bawling. I started crying, you know, and you know, it is what it is, man. I'm dealing with it the best that I can. Like I said, I'm dealing with the cards that I was dealt with, and here I am, the new middleweight champion of the world. You know, I wish Rob a speedy recovery. And after he comes back, you know, absolutely, let's make the fight happen. You know what I mean? I don't know how long Dana expects for him to be out. He says 4 to 6 weeks, but I highly doubt that, Ariel. And, you know, if he's out for another year, like, let's make an interim fight to have it. You know, if it's Israel, if he's jumping in front of the five guys in front of him, let's make it happen, you know, for the interim belt.
So I heard you say that, you know, you consider yourself the middleweight champion. You have the belt there, and you said that on Saturday. And I thought you did a great job of conveying that point to the audience. And I give you a lot of props for even showing up, because I'm sure that it was hard for you to be there. But has the UFC actually said this to you? Because it seemed like at the post-fight press conference, Dana was saying something else. He called it cute. He said that that was Henry Cejudo's belt. It seemed like he was dismissing what you were saying. So where do you actually stand with that title and in that division?
I got the title right here at home. I got it right here. I'm not going to be parading around in it anymore. People were mad I did that. I flew her first class, and she's doing well.
Was that Henry Cejudo's title, or was that the UFC's title that they gave to you?
That was my earned title that I won when Rob didn't show up, unfortunately. I mean, this is, like I said, this is a win by forfeit, and it's not the way that I wanted to win, but it's a win by forfeit, and I'm dealing with it the best that I can. And like I said, once Rob heals up, let's make the fight happen.
At the top of the show, I said that I think that you had to do that because you were almost fighting for your career at that point, because I know the narrative, and I saw you kind of address this on Twitter as well with the eye emoji, like, oh, now, you know, are they going to give the shot to Israel? Are they going to pass you up? You did nothing wrong. You showed up. But you almost have to tell everyone, like, no, I'm here. I showed up. I won via forfeit. Like, you almost have to ram this down everyone's throat. Is there a part of you that is worried that you're going to get skipped over because Israel has all this momentum behind him right now?
I don't see what momentum you're talking about. I mean, the fight that I saw was a great fight. But it reminded me of The Matrix. Have you ever seen The Matrix?
Yes.
You know, they're dodging punches, they're dodging kicks, they're dodging bullets, and it's all very exciting theatrics. And that's kind of what the fight with Israel and Anderson reminded me of, was just exciting theatrics. A lot of showboating, but, you know, he beat a 43-year-old Anderson Silva, you know, and I'm not sure that makes a claim for a title shot. But if the UFC decides that he's number one contender and he gets to skip the five guys in front of him, then so be it. I get to fight the number one contender and defend my title.
In other words, it doesn't sound like you were all that impressed with not only the fight itself, but just kind of his body of work in general. Is that accurate?
Correct.
Do you feel like he's overhyped?
I mean, not overhyped. Well, I guess it is in a way, but I mean, he deserves it. He talks well, he moves well, he fights well. But the performance that he showed on Saturday was not title worthy, in my opinion. You know, like I said, it was just all very exciting theatrics. You know, when I fight, I put guys away. You know, he wasn't able to put 43-year-old Anderson away. And I felt I would have done a different sort of job.
Who do you think is title worthy? If Whitaker is out and you're fighting for a belt next, who do you think is the number one contender?
Well, man, there's an exciting fight with Yoel and Mohachinia, but you know, Dana was pretty clear about Israel being the number one contender. And if he's the guy, then he's the guy. You know, but I wasn't very impressed with his performance on Saturday.
Being there? And you were supposed to headline that event, and now you're sitting in the crowd wearing a suit. What was that like?
Yeah, I mean, I'm still pretty pissed. I'm still pretty pissed I didn't get to fight. But you know, health is a priority, and you know, and if Rob would have gotten in that fight and I would have punched up or kicked him in the gut or wherever he has the hernia, then it would have been fatal. And I don't want that in my hands, man. I want him to be 100%. I want him to be healthy. You know, before every single fight, I go out there praying to God that me and my opponent never ever get injured and we come out unscathed. You know, I'm just grateful he got that issue taken care of, and he's going to be healthy, and hopefully he comes back soon, and we make the fight.
Was there any talk of you fighting someone else on short notice? I know Cerrone got people riled up. My partner, your friend Chael Sonnen, was trying to make a fight happen. Was there any talk of you fighting anyone on a couple hours' notice?
No. There was no fight offered. If I remember correctly, like, somebody had mentioned, like, weigh-ins already happened. There's a whole bunch of stipulations or regulations that have to happen, you know, and the weigh-ins already happened. There's no way anybody would be able to step up.
Would you have even considered it? To me, I think it's a crazy thing to ask of you on just a couple hours' notice. Your life has just been turned upside down. You're emotional, all this stuff. But you know how fans are. They want to see things get salvaged at the 11th hour. Would you have even considered that?
Maybe, Ariel, maybe. You know, but my eyes were set on this championship fight, on fighting Rob Whitaker for months. I mean, it's been 10 months
yeah.
that I've had to dream about this guy. I mean, I feel like I'm going, I, you know, I'm dreaming about this guy every single day for 10 months. I think I'm going gay for him. No, not that there's anything wrong with it, but, you know, I've had to dream about this guy for 10 months, man, and does it again. He pulls out of the fight, unfortunately, and here we are, man. I mean, I was dealt with this. You know, I don't even know where to go from here right now. You know, everything's up in the air right now. And I feel lost, and I don't really know what to do. And I hope Dana is able to come up with something soon.
Your manager, Ali Abdelaziz, told me on Saturday that you will be taken care of. What exactly does that mean? Are you getting paid as if you fought?
We didn't talk numbers, but I'm sure I'm not getting the full pay as if I fought. I'm pretty sure I'm not getting the full pay, but I'm getting something. We didn't talk numbers, but I'm getting something. And hopefully it's enough to cover my expenses.
Sure. Do you feel like you should get your full pay?
I mean, hell yeah, definitely. You know, I made the trip 8,000 miles to Australia, was there 2 weeks. You know, I did all the right things. I showed up for work. I showed up on weight. Ready to go to work, man. And I was fighting this staph infection on my face, on my body, the entire week. You know, I was on antibiotics the entire week, fighting this thing. And you know, the UFC doctors were gracious, and they were, you know, handling well, and they were real happy with how the infection on my skin was going away, and how it'd be okay to fight. The commission was okay letting me fight. Everything was on track, man. And it was just devastating, man. And, you know, to go through all that process, to do all that work and not be able to fight, not be able to compete, was just, man, it was horrible.
I have to admit, when I first got the text that the fight was canceled, the first thing that came to mind was the staph infection, because it was clear that, you know, there was on your neck, on your hands, on your face. How long were you battling that for? And was there ever any doubt as far as the fight being canceled? Was it ever in jeopardy?
No. As soon as the UFC doctors got there the week of the fight, they started handling it. They gave me antibiotics. They put me on the medication. They gave me creams that I can and put some of it on, and immediately they were really happy with the results. The very next day, the rash or whatever had significantly shrunk and had dried up into this it had dried up, you know, and it was going away. So there was no way that I wasn't going to be competing. You know, just because of this infection, man, I was going to go in there and fight this thing and go ahead and fight the fight. You know what I mean? The doctors were letting me fight. They were saying it was going to be okay.
How long were you dealing with that?
The week of the fight.
Okay.
It started, like Sunday before the fight week.
And how do you feel now?
I mean, I still have the rash, but it's dried up and it's a scab now. Like, it's gonna go away.
Okay. What about what Conor McGregor was tweeting about? Do you feel like that was, you know, crossing the line a bit? The things that he said about you. I'm sure you saw the tweet, right? Saying that it was ludicrous to even allow you to compete with the infection.
Oh my God! You want to talk about a leper? a guy that's full of disease, that's spreading disease all over Ireland. That's Conor McGregor. He's spreading his seed all over Ireland, impregnating ladies, not even and not claiming them. You know, that dude's a leper. Forget him.
Was it tough to go on social media last week? Because as I'm sure you probably saw a lot of memes, a lot of pictures, people talking about it. Or did you stay off of it?
No, I was on it. You know, I've seen what people are writing and what they're thinking. It's just funny to me. I welcome it, man. It's funny.
What about the reaction to you walking around with the belt and saying that you're the champion? You ruffled a lot of feathers, I'm sure. What has the reaction been online to that?
A lot of negative, comments. But I think it's real funny, man. This is the sport, man. One day the fans love you, the next day they hate you, and that's just how the sport is.
And so before you left the arena, before you left Australia, did you ever sit down with UFC brass and say, okay, this is what's going to happen. If he's back in this amount of time, you know, we're going to do the rematch, or we're going to actually try to put the fight back together. If he's not back in this amount of time, we're going to do, like, do you have any kind of game plan, or is that why you're saying you're lost? Because you really do not know what is going to happen.
Well, I sat down with Dana and he told me, you know, 4 to 6 weeks, Rob is expected to come train again. But, I mean, I highly doubt it. I think he's really banking on that 4 to 6 weeks and really hoping Rob gets healed up soon. But I'm thinking 4 to 6 weeks before he even starts training again. And then he has to go through another camp. That's another few months. And that's another year that Rob has not fought. I mean, he's fought twice in 2 years. And it's just a shame, man. I mean, the guy has had very unfortunate injuries and health issues, and it's unfortunate, man. I mean, I don't know what to say. I feel bad for him. I hope he recovers. I hope he gets healthy. And when he does get healthy, I'll give him the first crack at the title.
When you sat down with Dana, did you tell him about your theory as to why you consider yourself the champion now, that you won via forfeit? Did you make that pitch to him that you should be the champ?
No, I didn't talk to him about that. We just kind of briefly talked about when the fight would happen. He mentioned something about taking care of me and my expenses, and that was pretty much it.
Okay. And do you want to fight on that April 13th card? Are you looking to return right away?
Man, I was looking to return right away, but at this, you know, right now I'm going to go to Mexico. I'm going to hang out in Cancun for a few days and decompress a little bit and see where we go from here, because I am lost.
Yeah, I can understand. I could certainly understand that. Finally, Israel's about to come on the show right now. Is there any message that you would like to send his way?
Yeah, you know, if the fight with Rob can't happen, then I think it should be me and Israel for the interim title. And maybe you should let him know and see what he thinks about that.
Okay. Kelvin, I really appreciate you doing this. Thank you very much. I'm sorry it went down this way, and I hope that you finally get a chance to fight for the middleweight title sooner rather than later. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Ariel. Appreciate you, man.
All right, we'll talk to you soon. There he is, Kelvin Gastelum, and let us not waste any time. Let us say hello to the man who defeated Anderson Silva in the main event of UFC 234. The Last Stylebender himself returns. We're making it a bit of a tradition here, before the fight, after the fight, and in the bed. Again, I love it. Different sheets this time, because I think he's at home. Oh, no, you're still in Melbourne, right?
Yeah, I'm still out here. I'm just kicking it, enjoying myself, then enjoying the city.
Well, congratulations, Israel. What a performance. What a fight. We have a lot to discuss, so let us get right into it. Did that fight live up to your expectations?
Yeah, definitely. And I also exceeded my expectations because, the guy still got it, man. You know, like I said at the pre-fight presser, I said, y'all must have forgot. I don't think you guys really know who this man is. And in there, he tried Every trick, a lot of tricks he's used on people in the past. He's tried with me, and I didn't fall for them. You know, I didn't get caught in the spider's web, so I came out the winner.
So fair to say he actually surprised you a little bit.
Yeah, there was only one instance where he had me worried was when he jabbed me. And before I even realized, I've been jabbed, he hit me again with another jab, and they started to put pressure on. And then, yeah, that was the second round, that had me a little bit worried, like, okay, I got to watch out for that. And apart from that, I was good. I owned the whole fight. I dominated.
Is there a part of you that wishes there were two more rounds?
So when I texted Dana, I asked him for five rounds, but he said he couldn't put that on silver on short notice. So it would have been cool, you know, but we did what we did for three rounds. I felt we entertained. We entertained the smart people, the distinguished elite of the striking world who understand what we're doing, not the drungos of the crowd yelling, knock him out. And stand them up, those guys. So we don't fight for those guys. We fight for the guys who actually understand the craftsmanship of stand-up or fighting.
So once you heard about Robert Whittaker, you reached out to Dana White and you pitched him the idea of making this a five-round fight. That's what you wanted?
Yeah, straight away.
Wow.
But fair enough. And I said to, he said no, he couldn't put on silver, but I said, just ask them anyway.
Yeah.
So ask the camp anyway and see what they say, because they might want to. And Silva's been doing five rounds his whole career, so it's nothing new to him. And, yeah, I wasn't training for a five-round fight secretly. I didn't plan this, but, yeah, I would have done it, and I was ready for it.
Did he say no, or did Dana never ask him?
I don't think Dana asked him. It was too late to kind of throw it there, but, yeah.
Did you pitch interim title?
Interim. I don't know. Look, okay, understand this. This is not the first time that Robert has had to pull out or been on the sideline due to injury. And that 2 seconds, hold up, my eye is really bugging me.
Okay. No problem. It's not, take your time.
Little cross. I just woke up.
I appreciate you doing this in the morning again.
Stop it. It's nothing. So this isn't the first time this happened with Robert, and it's not in his control. Like I said, it's not in his control. But you just have to, they won't do it. I don't think so, but legitimately just take the title off him. Let me and Kelvin fight for the belt. Then I heard what Kelvin said. I'm down. The interim. Let's fight for the real belt. When Robert's ready, he can come see me.
Okay. And do you think that is what's going to happen? Like, have you had a chance to talk to Dana White about what? He seems very lost. He said that himself. What do you know about what their plans are?
No, he's being ambiguous. And, yeah, fair enough, because, you know, that whole thing just threw a big monkey wrench and everything. So, yeah, I know I held my end of the bargain. I fought an unranked guy, you know, who I didn't have to fight. But he kind of, I think Silva, he jumped the gun and let the cat out the bag because he wanted to make sure the world knew that, oh, I'm getting a shot at the belt next. Dana said it, so that way he couldn't really back out of it, all of the agreement in case, because it's public now. But Dana made it public anyway before the fight. So, and Silva wasn't the only one who kind of got that deal. I was the first one to get that deal. Behind the scenes, it's me and Dana. You know, and I didn't see anything. People were trying to poke the bear constantly, including you, but I was like, use common sense, wink, wink. I was always saying that, but I never really said anything officially, but yeah, I did my bit. I fought. So I feel like I'm fighting for the belt next. I don't care if it's Rob. I don't care if it's Kelvin. But all I know is I'm fighting for the UFC middleweight title in my next fight.
Remember when you were on the show last week and you said you had this plan that you were going to light the Rod Laver Arena on fire, but you couldn't tell us what it was, but something. Could you tell us now what was going to happen?
I was going to sneak out from under the cage with a chair and hit Robert Kelvin over the head with it. and then cause some commotion. I kept on reading on my Twitter feed that there's a bomb threat. I was like, oh, fucking hell. Jesus Christ. Nothing like that. It was just, okay, what I wanted to do was, after Rob wins, hopefully, was that just bring me back out, you know, and fighting for the belt next or whatever. Bang.
Yep.
Back out there. and then have me... then have me and Rob, or me and Calvin, stare at each other for 30 seconds. Just an iconic face-off to, like, hype up the next fight, to start off the marketing for the next fight. So, yeah, that was the plan. That was the plan. It would have been cool. It would have been cool. I just thought, just to set off the place on fire, especially if Rob won.
Yeah.
Just me and him with the belt around the shoulder, me standing there sniffing him. That'd been good.
And that's really the unfortunate byproduct in all this. I mean, of course, everyone wishes Rob well, and it's a horrible thing that has happened to him, but this was laid out so perfectly, and the UFC has had so much trouble as of late to, like, fit the pieces together. Here you have this mini tournament, and there's you from New Zealand, and there's him from Australia, and you're fighting on the same card in Australia, and the whole thing was just aligning so perfectly. The stakes were all laid out very clearly. I mean, it's been a long time since we had this, and it just was, it was almost too perfect. And then, of course, Saturday, the whole thing explodes. I mean, it's horrible. When you found out initially, what was your reaction? Because it almost, in my opinion, it almost devalued your fight a little bit, because that was the number one contender fight. Now there's all this drama with Kelvin and the rematch and all. I mean, it's just, the whole thing's a mess.
Yeah, when I found out, my first reaction honestly was, man, that must suck. Because as a fighter, I was like, imagine that. You just get all this way to this point and then nothing. No climax. Just such an anticlimax. You don't get to fight. And it's out of your control. So, and not just for Rob, but for Kelvin as well. So, I feel bad for them. But, hey, like I said, I showed up to work. I overcame adversity that week, and I showed up to work. So, I did my bit, and I'm fighting for the title next. And that's not saying, look, Rob would have fought if he could have. Trust me, no one's, like, scared to fight in this business at this level. So, but he just couldn't fight. But I don't know what causes hernias. I don't know what he was doing in his training camp or his life that would have caused this. But people need to look after themselves, man. So I hope he looks after himself and gets back to the, you know, to the game soon.
What adversity did you overcome?
I was sick before I got on the plane. And as soon as I touched down in Melbourne, that's why Wednesday, I just scrapped my whole media day on Wednesday.
Oh, wow.
And pushed everything to... So yeah, I was on antibiotics. I was, my whole system was out of whack. So yeah, I'm glad I was able to just do the right things, heal up within a day and a half, and get back on it.
What was wrong?
I just had a throat infection, so I couldn't talk properly.
Wow.
And yeah, if they had me do the media stuff, because we tested it, like, kind of play. I think it was Tuesday. We played it by ear to see how it would feel. But I wasn't getting better. So I knew Wednesday was my busiest day. So if I had to do that, and just, it was starting to hurt talk with the throat infection. I started to sound like Kanye West Through the Wire. So yeah, I was like, nah, I need to take the day off and rest because I want to make it to the fight. So you have to play these things by ear. You have to listen to your body. A lot of people in this game, they just think, oh, harden up sometimes, and you push through. No, you need to listen to your body, and you have to distinguish when you're being a bitch or when your body's giving you warning signs like, hey, asshole, slow the f*** down. you're only human, you know, so, yeah, I did that.
Despite that, I thought you did a phenomenal job of selling the fight. Like, you set the narrative, you set the tone. It was great. The press conference was great. The face-offs were great. But I have to admit, Israel, Friday, our time, Saturday, your time, I'd never seen anything like what happened at the weigh-ins. He starts crying. You start getting emotional. And then I started to think, like, is Israel shook here? What's going on? He's all in his feelings. He's crying. Is he giving him too much respect? Is this Pat Barry versus Mirko Krokop? I was a little worried about your mental state. Why did you react that way to him crying? And I felt like he was trying to play mind games with you. I thought that that was his last trick, the final maneuver by the troll to try to get under your skin in your mind that you weren't expecting it. And then all of a sudden, like, I was worried about how you would respond. And then my theory, I want to give you the whole thing that I played out. Then my theory was the main event offer, now that Robert was out and you got bumped up, that almost like woke you back up and you're like, okay, now it's on. Like, I have to forget about all that. Like, now this, I was the main event this whole time. I was the guy I got put, now this is where I'm supposed to be. So that almost gave you the jolt that you needed. Am I right about any of that?
You're not right about it, but I like your theory. I like your theory. So you watched my interview with, I think it was Brett Akimoto right afterwards on ESPN.
Yes.
And I said, I'm impressed. Really impressed. That was his last trump card. That was his last hoorah. Like, man, nothing I've done has worked with this guy. Okay. And I don't think it was fake, to be honest. And afterwards now, I don't think it was like fake emotions. I think it was real emotion. It was raw, but it was a trump card to try and get me to lower my guard down, to try and get me in my feelings. You know, so yeah, I said it like verbatim. I said, I don't give a fuck. It changes nothing at the end of the day. I said, you can watch the ESPN interview with Brett afterwards. And I did say, like, yeah, it's nothing. It doesn't change anything. I'm still going to whoop his ass. And yeah, when it, like, it never shook me once. Even I told you, Eugene was like, whatevs. If he felt like that was all his emotions, he didn't know what to do with his emotions. So it just surfaced, it surfaced up and just overflowed in tears. Like, you know, like a shooked up Coke bottle fizzing out. So yeah, it doesn't change anything at the end of the day, you know, tears or no tears. I'm still going to do what I did anyway, but yeah.
Okay.
Kudos to him.
All right.
Kudos to him.
You still want to see him fight? You think he still has a little left in him?
He can chill. But like I said, Anderson Silva, he can do whatever he wants. So he can still fight. He can. I don't get why Nick Diaz, but yeah, he can still fight. Maybe just one more fight in Curitiba and that's it for him. But hey, it's cool. At least I got to share the cage with him. You know, I faced the guy, you know, the guy that I consider the GOAT for the longest time. So I'm cool. I'm happy. I did what I did. And yeah, I'm happy.
And so, okay. So now can you hear me still, Israel?
Perfect. Loud and clear.
Okay. What do you think about what Kelvin is doing, walking around with the belt, calling himself, you know, middleweight champion, saying, in my world, look, you don't show up to the wrestling mat, you forfeit, right? You're done. I should be the champion. Like, do you agree with him to a degree?
Yeah, to a degree, I agree, because this ain't wrestling. This ain't wrestling. I told him, Kelvin, put that belt down. I meant that, because it was just like, it's a fake belt. I was wondering where did he get it from. Did he Toys R Us? I don't know. But they've closed down. So, but I heard he got it from Harry Cejudo. Yeah, I kind of agree to a certain point. But hey, if Rob can't fight, if he's got to heal up, if he needs a little bit more time, then me and Kelvin fight for the real belt. Just take the belt off Rob, because this is not the first time. I don't have the stats, but I know he's had surgeries on surgeries, and he's had to have long layoffs and this and that. And it's unfortunate, but same thing happened with Dom de Cruz. And eventually, the UFC was like, all right, then we have to take this off you because someone else has to fight for the belt. Can't keep holding the division up. And like I said, I'm not here for a long time. I'm here for a good time. So me and Kelvin can fight for the belt. And, yeah, we fight for the belt, and he can fight me as a number one contender when he heals up. Makes sense. Interim. Everyone's just throwing interims on everything. Interim title. Interim title. I'm like, why? Just, if you can't fight, you can't fight. It's okay. Just don't worry. You at least you have your spot back as number one contender. So what's the harm? If you're so confident that you're going to get it back, just let it go.
And what about all these haters? All these haters coming out of the woodwork. Chris Weidman, what's going on with all the haters? No one giving you props? There's like a full list of middleweight guys who are just hating on you. What's up with that?
Ariel, not once you ever seen me after a person fights, not even out of my division or in my division, to say, not once have you ever seen me tweet some shit about them. You know why? I don't need nothing from them. I need nothing. You know why they tweet? Because they need something from me. They want some of that shine. Why am I going to say I'm overrated all at once? Whoever, what's the Brazilian juice monkey? He can say what he wants. It's different when you're in there with me. I can say Whiteman is overrated ever since USADA came on play. I want to take out the juice monkey as well before he takes himself out the game with some bullshit with USADA. So, yeah, they can say whatever they want to say. At the end of the day, I'm sitting pretty. I did my job. I had fun. And I played the game with Silva like no one else has. It was like, it was some movie type shit. And I was theatrical. It was beautiful. And yeah, let them hate all they want. Sip on that haterade. Uh-huh.
They're all coming out of the woodwork. It's amazing. But I guess that's a sign that you're doing something right, that you're at the top. Everyone wants to, you know, shoot the guy who's at the top, right?
Exactly. Like I said, I've never ever done that to anyone else because I'm not a hater. You know, I understand. And whenever, if even for me personally, in my personal life coming up, if I feel some type of way, if I feel some kind of like a green-eyed monster poking his head out, I know it says more about me than it does about the other person. So I like to go within and find out what is it about me that's making me shoot this guy down or look at this guy and be jealous. So they need to go shut the door in the bathroom, look in the mirror, and have a conversation with themselves. But they're not that introspective. They're a bunch of fucking juice monkeys. So, yeah, sip on that haterade, you bitches.
April 13th, is that too early for you?
I'll fight next week. April 13th, no. But we bump the brakes. Okay. You know, look, it's been a year. Officially, it's been a year.
Right.
Five fights in 1 year. I've been busy, and I keep saying I'm gonna take a break. And I was gonna go to Europe, and I put it away. And I've still got the trip kind of booked, but I'm gonna scratch that trip because what's the point? I really want to go home. Like for whatever reason, Africa's calling me, Nigeria's calling me. So I want to touch ground in Nigeria. Right now they're having elections, so it's not a good time. I know my people. It's crazy whenever elections come around because you get motherfuckers trying to, you know, they're very corrupt. So I just want to make sure things died after the election, and I want to touch base in Nigeria. And, you know, it doesn't even matter. Even I'll see. I just right now it's still like 2 days out from the fight.
Yeah.
I'm still in the twilight zone. So, yeah, but April's not too soon.
Okay, but they didn't talk. They didn't throw any dates. You didn't have any like real business talk with Dana afterwards, or did you?
I haven't seen him. I haven't seen him afterwards. He hasn't texted me. He hasn't called me. So
what?
Yeah,
you're kidding.
Oh no, that's all good.
What are you talking?
They're busy, man.
You saved the show. What are you talking about? Everyone went home happy that night. I mean, not even a text, a thank you, a congratulations, a we'll talk, a nothing, an emoji, a heart, a smiley face, nothing. What? You blow my mind right now. What?
Really?
You're blowing my mind.
I'm not that worried about it. I'm chilling. I've been hanging out with my people anyway, so eventually we'll talk. But right now, I just want to hang out with my people and have some good food in Melbourne. And I've been eating. I've been chopping out here in Melbourne. Yeah. I just want to chill. So business will come later on. Right now, I'm just chilling.
Slide in your DM something. I mean, really, unbelievable. I mean, talk about not being appreciative for what the man did. I mean, you carried that whole event on your back.
He appreciates, and I'm going to make sure the whole thing with the pay-per-view points.
Yeah.
They don't have to spare enough. It wasn't implemented in my contract, but I feel me and Silva, we were the fights. The numbers don't lie.
Yes.
And I know they have more numbers behind the scene, but the ones I saw on YouTube don't lie because 3 times more people wanted to watch our fight. That it shows that we can see. I'm pretty sure it's even way more. It's way more. And you look at even the official countdown on YouTube itself didn't have nearly enough views as just mine and Silva's countdown.
Right.
Because people knew the fight they wanted to see. You know, even Rob knows this. Kelvin knows this. So the fact that now they didn't show up to work, your boy did, and that offer for 5 rounds. Come on. Let that, I mean, that's a lot of money being left on the table. So if they want to be nice and keep, let's keep that good working relationship going. I mean, fair's fair. It wasn't in the contract, but I did my bit. So those points that me and Silver pretty much sold the whole fucking card on, those points.
Yep.
We should rack some of those points up in our bank account.
I agree. You did everything that they asked you to do. It was an impressive week for you. You sold that show. You carried that show on your back. And by the way, I was impressed with all of it, but maybe most impressive was your entrance. What you did, that one-handed cartwheel, that was insane, that whole thing that you did there. That was unbelievable. I never seen you do that before. Was that a new thing that you broke out just for this fight? You know, you turned around, you did the thing. It was incredible right before the fight. Absurd.
Yeah, that's some taijutsu shit. So, Rock Lee, see, so me, that's right, me right there doing the white crew a little bit. Just to kind of pay homage, because that's my first, my second stand-up martial art. But that was what this fight was going to be, a taijutsu stylistic matchup. So Rock Lee, this is some weeboo shit. I dropped the weights like Rock Lee. I posted it on my Instagram, my last post. And I just hit the cartwheel, and then stands into the fucking dragon. So, no, man, Ariel, this is nothing new to me, man. These are moments. It's moments like that. That are going to be iconic, that are going to be, like, even after the first round when I missed that head kick and he tried to come at me and I hit him with the Rock Lee stance and said, bring it. Like, moments like that, those are going to be moments and pictures that are going to be in time and stamped in history forever. And I live for those. Like, that was my title fight. So I feel like I beat the longest. I beat the guy, you know, the guy that I consider the greatest fighter of all time. So, yeah, like, moments in history like that is what I'd like to do this shit for as well.
The sport, the organization, everything is better because you're in it, my man. It's so much fun to watch you fight. It's so much fun to cover you. Congrats on your year. What a year it was. 5 wins. And what a way to cap it off. Back in Australia with the win over Anderson Silva. I hope you get what you deserve. I hope you do get to fight for the belt next in some way, because that was what was at stake and that's what they told you. And it's really unfortunate what happened, but they've got some planning to do here. They've got to figure out this mess of a situation. For now, though, congratulations. Right. Enjoy the victory. Enjoy your time over there. And as always, I really do appreciate you and Ash and the team over there giving us your time. I hope, Israel, on camera right now, on the record, when you get big time, when you get really big time, international superstar, don't forget about us little people, all right? You're very accessible now. Don't forget about me. Because it happens.
Hey, those who are nice to me, I'm nice to them. If you keep that same energy, I will too.
All right, my man. Thank you so much. Enjoy your day. Appreciate it again, and congratulations.
Easy. Mwah.
There he is, the last style bender. Israel Adesanya, big win over Anderson Silva. Also, big wins for Montana De La Rosa. How about Jimmy the Brute Crute? Wow. I know it's somewhat controversial, but that is a name to remember. And Devontae Smith, Instagram people, let's get this man back on Instagram. Let's get him his, although he did say that his Twitter page is now blowing up all of a sudden. I think I may have helped him out with that one, but let's get the guy back on Instagram. That was a lot of fun, that post-fight interview as well. Also, UFC announced this past weekend that they're coming back to Chicago June 8th, and that is UFC 238, I do believe. All right. We are out of time. I appreciate everyone who tuned in. I appreciate everyone who stopped by today. Another crazy week in the world of MMA, another crazy week in the world of UFC, and guess what? The fun doesn't stop. This week is absolutely nuts with the two Bellator events, Friday, Saturday, and then, of course, the UFC's return to Phoenix on Sunday. Big main card on ESPN, the first ever main card on ESPN. So we've had the prelims now, and they're doing very good, but the main card. Now, I know Abe Cowa, my friend, telling me that I'm forgetting about Yoel Romero. Yoel Romero is certainly in the mix, but A, he's filming a reality show, and B, he has a fight, I thought, against Paulo Costa. So, I mean, the middleweight division is interesting. You can't hate on it, but there's kind of a mess there at the top right now. And first and foremost, we hope that Robert Whittaker gets well soon, and we hope that he makes a speedy recovery, and then they can figure it all out. Thank you very much, Pollyanna Viana and Alex Davis. Thank you very much, James Vick. Thank you very much, Kevin Lee, Michael Page, Paul Daly, Francis Ngannou, Kelvin Gastelum, and of course, Israel Adesanya. What are they going to do at 185? Stay tuned. A lot more talk to come this week on all our different shows. If you missed anything, YouTube, Twitter, all those places and more. Back next week, same time and place. Until then, I say peace. I'm out of here.